From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Concert tour set down. These two are dominating. It's four back to the Chosen Brawn and Uncle Boogie. And now Concert Tour is right up alongside Freedom Fighter. Freedom Fighter still not surrendering. They're nose and nose for the wire. And Concert Tour prevails. He had to work to do it.
I think Concert Tour, he's a horse I'm very high on. And I think he's got a lot of upside to him. And he has natural speed, too. Should be a good test for him.
It is Paddle River. He has built up a 6 or 7 length advantage. Cowan is racing in second, but Paddle River has leveled out, and he is running strongly to the wire. It is Paddle River now double digits in front. Paddle River and the Smarty Jones, straight and strong.
Paddle River, I think he's a nice colt that's going to have a big future.
Welcome to the Equine Forum. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Yeah, I would say so. Hello again, everyone. Good morning and welcome to what promises to be another five-star edition of the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, and it's all right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in the saddle with you for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. You just heard Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert in the open to the show, talking about another one of his talented three-year-olds, Concert Tour, who will be among the favorites in today's Rebel Stakes at Oaklawn. Pretty much a win in your end for the Kentucky Derby, with 50 points awarded to the winner. Bob joined me on the show last Saturday to share his thoughts on all of his top Kentucky Derby prospects. That interview, by the way, is on our website at horseracingradio.net. If you missed it, you can go back and take a listen to Bob talking about his prospects. I asked him which of his three-year-olds were showing him both the mental and physical maturity he likes to see from them at this time of year. He immediately mentioned three names: Life is Good, Medina Spirit, and Concert Tour. Life is Good, well, all he did last weekend was go out and dominate the San Felipe, winning by 8 lengths over Medina Spirit. And Bob kind of indicated in that interview that Life is Good was his number one prospect. Medina Spirit, good horse, going to win a lot of big races up the road, just not as quick and maybe not quite as athletic as Life is Good. Concert Tour, the third horse that Bob mentioned, is 2-1 second choice behind Caddo River in today's Rebel. And Bob was spot on last weekend. Now, you can say, okay, Life is Good, prohibitive favorite, supposed to win the way he did. Yes. But when I asked Bob the question about the mental and physical maturity he likes to see from his three-year-olds this time of year, those three names, Life is Good, Medina Spirit, Concert Tour, are the three names that came out of his mouth almost immediately. And if what happened last weekend in California is any indication, you better pay attention to Concert Tour. Now, I know he's 2-1. I know he's second choice in the Rebel later today. So that's kind of a Captain Obvious type of statement. But that race, that's going to make for a tremendous showdown later today. Post time for the Rebel, which is race 11 of 12, is set for 6:16 Eastern. That's 5:16 Central. Now, you also heard the soundbite from trainer Brad Cox praising Caddo River. He dominated that Smarty Jones Stakes last time out. Just ran away from him and looked every bit the part of a horse that wants to go even further. I'm going to spend plenty of time talking about the Rebel and the other graded stakes being contested this afternoon at Oaklawn as I move throughout the show. Trainer Pete Miller, who saddles Grade 1 winner Get Her Number, not to be overlooked in that race later today, is going to be here in the second hour of the program. And our HRRN analyst, Bobby Newman, who is on site in Hot Springs, Arkansas, will be with me to share his thoughts on all the top contenders and storylines in hour number 3. Also in that final hour of the show, trainer Ken McPeak will be with me to discuss his champion, Swiss Skydiver, who makes her 4-year-old debut in the Grade 1 Beholder at Santa Anita later today. He'll also talk about En Voutante, who gets her 4-year-old season started in the Grade 2 Azari at Oaklawn. So a busy day for trainer Ken McPeak. You'll hear from him again toward the end of the program. Another big performance last weekend came courtesy of the Mark Cassie-trained Helium in the Tampa Bay Derby. at the back of the pack early, he stormed home to win by 3/4 of a length. Go back and watch it if you haven't seen it. And, of course, he remains perfect in his young career. Now, 3 for 3. His owner, John Green, from DJ Stable, will be here to look back on that big win later in today's show. And the conversation since that race concluded, at least the talk coming out of the Mark Cassie-John Green camp, is that they will now wait the 49 days. Well, it'll be longer than that because last weekend's Tampa Bay Derby was run, 7 days ago? So the 56 days between the Tampa Bay Derby and the Kentucky Derby, without a prep in between. They'll just train right up to the race. We'll see if that's still the plan when I talk to John coming up in just a little bit. Next Tuesday and Wednesday, the attention of our sport shifts completely away from the racing side of things to the future stars with the OBS March 2-Year-Olds in Training Sale. Consigner Eddie Woods, who is always among the leading consigners at 2-Year-Old Sales, is going to be with me later in the first hour. I'm also going to visit with Crystal Fernung of Journeyman Stud to tell you all about a very unique idea, which is tied to the first session of the OBS sale on Tuesday, and it will benefit a couple of very deserving charities. It's a really cool story. Crystal's going to be with me in just a little bit to tell you all about what she is involved with and how she is benefiting some great charities down there in Florida. So here's the lineup. Crystal Fernung in just a few minutes after our first commercial break. Eddie Woods coming up at 8:35 following today's first bet. Hour two of the show kicks off at 9 o'clock Eastern with John Green from DJ Stable. Kurt Becker will then join me for an extended stroll through racing history segment at 9:20 Eastern. That's all presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. At 9:45 is trainer Pete Miller, right after today's edition of Calling All 3-Year-Olds, which is presented by Spendthrift. And at 10 o'clock Eastern time, that starts hour number three, and we kick it off, as we always do, with our popular weekly segment, In the Room with Sean Clancy, as Sean sits down for a unique one-on-one, jockey-to-jockey conversation like only he can do with the ultra-talented Drayden Van Dyke. You won't want to miss that. That's going to be a special 15 minutes here on the program today. Again, 10 o'clock Eastern. Bobby Newman comes up at 10:25 Eastern time to talk about all the races at Oaklawn, and then Ken McPeak in the final segment of today's show right around 10:40. So if you can't tell, another loaded equine forum for you here this morning. Today's question of the day, you can go to at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to let me know your thoughts. If you could go back in time and attend one race, which race would you choose? You can only attend one. If you can go back in time and pick one race to attend, which race would you choose? For me, it's pretty easy. It's a race that I know a lot of people are going to say, okay, I want to go to a race I wasn't there for. I want to go experience that. But for me, one of the great thrills in my time as a fan of horse racing came very early on in 1994 in the Traverse Stakes with Holy Bull. Of course, everybody knows that listens to this program regularly that Holy Bull is my all-time favorite horse. And that particular race was just so special. I really can. If I sit here and think about the race and the way it unfolded and Concern in those gold colors and moving along the rail, I can still see Concern coming after him. And just a blur of gold whizzing across the rail as he was making his move on the far turn. And then, you know, to get right up next to Holy Bull and have Holy Bull dig in, Tom Durkin's call, as game as a racehorse could be, is so appropriate. So for me, I would go back. I would sit in the Saratoga Grandstand again, just like I did. I don't know if it was Section X, maybe Section Y, all the way down toward the top of the stretch. I was in the cheap seats. But, man, no cheap seats at Saratoga. That was a special, special race and a special day. And I would go back there again, and I would watch that race again if I could go back in time. But maybe for you, it's a race that you didn't get to attend. You watched on TV. You listened to it on the radio with us. And you're thinking, man, I would love to have been there for that one. So if you could go back in time and choose one race, which race would you choose to attend? Let me know. At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. All right. A very, very busy Equine Forum all kicks off next, right after this. It's the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Oscar Performance, the pinnacle of success as a precocious juvenile and again at three.
Oscar Performance, bravo! He wins the juvenile turf.
Oscar Performance has won the Secretary of State's.
Oscar Performance goes all the way in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
And the pinnacle of success at four, equaling the world record for a mile in the Grade 3 poker and dominating the competition in the Grade 1 Woodbine Mile.
But it's Oscar Performance shrugs them off. A gate-to-wire winner.
Oscar Performance, standing at Millridge.
I'm three-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Napravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I listen to Horse Racing Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're moving for the stretch. Sonny's Halo on the inside has his head in front. Desert Wine is second. Highland Park's still right there. Now coming up on the outside in Gaming Ground, Blue of Gold. Marfa on the extreme outside. Down the stretch, it's Sonny's Halo on the inside. Desert Wine is second. On the outside, Marfa. Up between horses, Blue of Gold and Clay Fellow. They're nearing the finish. It's Sonny's Halo. He's going to win it. Sonny's Halo wins it a length and a half.
I love that vintage call. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Mike Battaglia. People forget that Mike called the Kentucky Derby there. Mike Battaglia, the 1983 Kentucky Derby. Sonny's Halo getting the victory that afternoon. It was a popular win for Sonny's Halo. David Cross Jr., the trainer. That was in 1983, as I mentioned. He is one of three, and as a matter of fact, he was the first of three Kentucky Derby winners to prep in the Rebel before wearing the roses later that year. You had Sonny's Halo in 1983. You had to wait until 2004 for the next horse that ran in the Rebel to come back and win the Kentucky Derby. And that was Smarty Jones, and then American Pharoah in 2015. So you had three horses run in the Rebel, win the Kentucky Derby. All three won the Rebel. So no horse that has been beaten in the Rebel, as we often see in other prep races, has come back to win. So, moral of the story, if you're running in the Rebel Stakes later today, you better win it. At least if history is any teacher, you better win it if you have aspirations of being draped in roses on the first Saturday in May. By the way, looking forward to bringing you that exclusive radio coverage here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We are going to be jam-packed with Derby programming all week long, beginning on Tuesday before the Kentucky Derby, and taking you all the way through the Run for the Roses in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network. And can't wait to do it. Proud and privileged. This is the 11th consecutive year that we here at the Horse Racing Radio Network have been able to say that we have been the exclusive radio partner of the Derby. And it's been an amazing ride, and really looking forward to bringing you that coverage. And it's shaping up to be one heck of a Kentucky Derby. You look at, assuming all things being equal. Now, keep in mind, we are still I'll give you the exact countdown. Haven't done that yet. 49 days, 7 hours, 29 minutes, and 40 seconds away from the Run for the Roses, Saturday, May 1st. But you look at what Life is Good did last weekend. And many people are going to say, okay, he's the leader in the clubhouse right now based on his performance last week. But you also have Greatest Honor, who ran a massive race down in Florida and winning the Fountain of Youth Stakes. Don't forget about the juvenile champion, Essential Quality. Remember him? He looked great in his 3-year-old debut, and Brad Cox has been saying all along that this is a horse that has been doing everything he has hoped he would do in the off season, in the winter months leading up to that debut. Medina Spirit, I know he was no match last weekend for Life is Good, but he's another horse that when you're looking at the Derby picture, I think you have to consider him, right? He's very, very capable. And if he gets the right trip, maybe Medina Spirit is the one standing in that Derby winner's circle. Helium? What do you do with Helium? Last to first, pretty much, in winning the Tampa Bay Derby. Again, you're going to hear from his owner, John Green, coming up later in the program, right around 9 o'clock Eastern time. But Helium certainly looked good. Now, I know that when you look at the Tampa Bay Derby, it's not going to be rated as highly from a competition standpoint as the San Felipe. But Helium certainly did everything right, and he has done it right. 3 for 3 for his career. How about Mandaloon? Talking about Brad Cox and Essential Quality and Brad Cox and Cattle River in today's Rebel, he also has Mandaloon. And Mandaloon's a horse that is putting all the pieces together. I know that Brad has been high on him early on in the season. He joined me for an interview on this show early in the year, a couple of months ago, I guess it was. I think it was back in January. And he talked about Mandaloon. And if you remember when Jude Feld was doing the show with me every Saturday morning, he and I would quite often talk about reading between the lines when you interview trainers and ask them about their top horses. Because quite often, a trainer's voice, if you listen closely, will have a different cadence to it, a different tone. It'll pick up just a little bit when you ask him about a horse that he really, really likes. He may not come right out and say it. Many times they will. But it's just a different tone to their voice that lets you know, okay, yeah, I'm pretty high on this horse. And that was kind of what Brad Cox did with Mandaloon. And boy, you have to think he's high on Caddo River, huh? Caddo River looks like he could turn into a monster. Now, he gets a stiff test today. This is the fun thing about watching these prep races and moving closer to the first Saturday in May, because every race is a stepping stone. At least ideally, that's the way you want it to set up for your horses. And that's exactly what's happening with Caddo River. You look at his resume. He comes out at Saratoga last September, 7 furlongs, 2nd. Comes out October 11th at Belmont last year, 7 furlongs, 2nd, but beaten only 3/4 of a length. Had the lead for a bit in the stretch, actually, and then gave it up. Then he breaks his maiden in his final start as a 2-year-old in November at Churchill and does it by, 9.5 lengths. And he takes the field wire to wire, wins that race. That was a mile race, stretched him out a little bit. He wins. Comes back, takes the Smarty Jones by 10 on January 22nd in his 3-year-old debut. The good thing is he has early speed, and he's going to need it because he breaks from the rail in the Rebel today. Florent Giroux back aboard. He's a perfect 2 for 2 aboard Caddo River. And you have to think that this race, Caddo River, Concert Tour from Bob Baffert, Keep Me in Mind who won the Kentucky Jockey Club on November 28th. He's making his three-year-old debut. He comes back. He's talented. And get her number from the barn of Pete Miller. And all he did was win the American Pharoah to wrap up his two-year-old season. So this Rebel Stakes today is really loaded. This is a strong prep race, and we're going to find out a lot about these top three-year-olds and who moves to the head of the class, so to speak. Should be a good one. And, again, Pete Miller is set to join me later in the program. Going to talk to him about Get Her Number and looking forward to that. Crystal Fernung is now with us. It is a busy day for her, so we are happy to have her aboard as we get ready for the OBS two-year-olds in training sale, and she is part of an endeavor here, which is just spectacular. It's going to benefit a couple of tremendous charities in Florida, and Crystal, kind enough to spend some time with me here this morning. Crystal, good morning. Happy to have you on board.
Good morning.
I'm going to say a name, and I want you to tell me all about this, because this is really cool. I read through the press release, and this is something that is it's unique, it's different, and something that you should be very proud of. Clockwork Fury. What on earth is that?
Well, Clockwork Fury here in Ocala and started out in 2000. And yeah, in 2000, we did what we call a horse fever project. It's a life-size fiberglass horse structures that we would commission artists to submit artwork for, and then we get usually it's a panel of about five different judges from across the state to jury the work, and then we would auction them off. And in 2010, the first year we did it, we raised just shy of $1 million, and it started the Marion Cultural Alliance. So then in 2010, we did it again, and now 2020, we're doing a 20-year anniversary. So we've gone from pretty much no public art around Ocala Marion County. And when you look at it by the size of the area, we have more public art per our size area than what Chicago does now. Our art and cultural arts has just really exploded here. So Brent and I in 2010 went to the horse fever auction having no intentions of buying anything. And, you know, all the other horses are there, and there's like 30 of them there, and they're all beautifully painted. And this one catches my eye. When I looked at him, I thought he was metal. He was his form. What Mark did was he took the form and he cut it up and then put it back together. And the inside of him is just full of like gears and tools and chains and all kinds of stuff. And he was inspired by this antique book on steampunk art that he had found. And so that's what he figured he would do with this horse. Well, in 2010, what he was able to do then was he had like a box in his mouth that you could put dry ice in and it would steam, and one in his hips that would steam, and you could move his tail, make his head move. You know, he had a iPad or an iPod in him with like the sounds of horses hollering and gears banging and clanging. Well, they brought him in to the auction area, which was in a big tent at Mrs. Weber's Live Oak Farm. And next thing we knew, we owned him. So he's been standing out in front of our office for the last 10 years, and we get a lot of tours through there. We did before this last year, and he's been photographed all over the world. People always think he's made of metal. We had Wildcat Air back then, and when Creech Horse Transportation delivered all the horses to the new owners, and when they delivered him, Wildcat Air wouldn't even walk past him. He was right in front of his paddock. And it just, he was just the strange thing that, you know, they all was worried about. So last March, I had contacted Mark Hirschberger, the artist, and, you know, Clockwork's been through three hurricanes and numerous hot summer, Florida summers. And I told him that, you know, he needed some repairs, and he had gotten to where every spring he had bluebirds nesting inside of him. And they would like sit on his ears and down his neck and on his hips. And I had all these neat pictures with these bluebirds standing on him. Well, Mark came and got him. And in the meantime, all this other stuff happened with COVID. FTBOA, who supports Florida Thoroughbred Charities, had to cancel their big gala, their awards gala last March. They had to cancel their big golf tournament and one other fundraiser. And then this coming March or this month, they had to cancel it again. So they've taken this huge financial hit. And they support the Second Chances Thoroughbred Retirement Farm that's at the Lowell Women's Lowell Correctional Institute, just down the road from Brent and I. And it's a wonderful program. It's the only one in the country that pairs thoroughbred, retired thoroughbreds with women. And it was one of the very first ones in the country. And the recidivism rate of the women who've gone through this program is 3%.
Wow.
And I know of one woman in particular who ended up in there at like 19, 20 years old and applied to go through the horse program, never had been around horses, went through the program, got out. A very prominent two-year-old pinhooker here in town hired her, taught her how to gallop horses. Long story short, she now, I think it's like 5 years since all that happened and she got out. She's married, has a child, has a house. You know, it's completely saved this woman's life. So Mark has taken this horse, and now I always tell everybody he's brought him to 2020 technology. Now he's got a complete fiber optic system through him. He's got... he's added crystals like down his legs. He's got a crystal brain. He's got a crystal heart. He's got turquoise. He's got lapis. Now he's got what's called a crash cart next to him, and it plugs into him. And now it's just steam that'll come out of his nose. It comes out of his hips. He's added, when I had him, he had to be hooked up to electricity, and that option is still there. But now what he added was, in his right hip, he has a hand-cranked generator that he can supply his own power.
Wow.
To do all this crazy stuff he does. And then, for me, the piece de resistance is that he took one of the bluebird nests out of him, preserved it, and this is this man's talent. He made a mechanical bluebird that, when you open one section of him and you bring it out, any kind of noise or vibration or anything, the bird chirps, it moves its head around, it does all kinds of stuff. He has antique German opera glasses or his eyes, and he has a solar panel for his star that makes his eyes glow in the evenings.
So
he just
cool.
does so many things. It's this... He went back to Mark. We had him at OBS in January so people could look at him. And we had him at the a big unveiling of him at Marine Culture Alliance. And then he went back to Mark. And we finally, when we got ready to take him over to OBS March, where he is now, got there yesterday, we told Mark we have to take him because he just keeps adding more stuff to him that he can that makes him do more things. He's truly... I've never seen anything like this horse. He's kids go nuts for him. I just think he would be great for like a children's museum or hospital or, you know, something like that. Cause the kids, when you start making him do all these stuff, man, their eyes just light up and they think he's just perfect.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I know Mark Hirschberger, the artist who you've talked about, had that quote in the press release, which I loved. He said, "Clockwork Fury came to life originally in a dream, or maybe it was a nightmare, but now it is a dream come
yeah.
true." And with all the updates that he's made and the new technology that's involved with Clockwork Fury, it seems like a can't-miss proposition. And as you said, it's something that's so perfect, not just for people in the horse industry, but for an organization outside the horse industry that wants to celebrate the horse and celebrate a unique piece of art. Clockwork Fury is something that they should really take a look at. And he will be let in as the last hip of the sale on the first day, there's two sessions, Tuesday and Wednesday, he will be led into the auction ring, just like any other horse would be, as the last hip on March 16th. And that's going to be pretty cool, too. How can, Crystal, if people do want to place a bid, I'm sure they can do it in person, but how can they do it if they're watching remotely in California or in New York or some other part of the country?
Well, there's a couple of different ways. They can go on to the Horse Fever 2020 Facebook event page, and there's if they click, they start reading the description. If they click more, there's a link where you can go and fill out a form to say that you're interested. You can call me. My cell phone number is 352-266-4652. My journeyman office number is 352-629-1200. That's probably the best one, 352-629-1200. And what OBS, they've just been phenomenal through this whole thing, because once I got Mark to spiff him up a little bit, and the Horse Fever 2020 project with all the other painted horses that are being done right now allowed us to kind of piggyback on their event with Clockwork. And once I got that part done, then I went to Todd Wojciechowski at OBS and said, we've got to have a way to auction him, and I don't want him to just be available to people here. I think he's got, you know, national appeal. Would you guys let us sell him here? And they talked about it, run it through the board. Everybody was right on board, and that was kind of what really got the engine going. And then a couple of weeks ago, we were trying to work it to where you could use their online bidding, but we just kind of run into some issues there. So what they're going to do now is you can call OBS. We can, Mark or Todd says that they can take about 5 to 6 phone bids at a time. So you can watch it live on their website, and you can call, arrange to have OBS call you. They'll call you about 5 or 10 minutes before he goes into the ring, and you can bid that way. There's no pre-qualification necessary. You don't have to do any credit applications or anything like that. And then what really sets it off is that Creech Horse Transportation has offered to work with us to, if he's bought within the United States, they'll work with us on getting him delivered as well.
Oh, fantastic. Wow. Wow, fantastic. It's a great, great idea, and so generous on the part of Crystal Fernung and her husband Brent, who, of course, Crystal with me now. You've been listening to her here explaining this unique auction item coming up on Tuesday, March 16th, the last hip of day number one, the first session of the OBS 2-year-olds in training sale, Clockwork Fury. You can visit journeymanstallions.com if you want to get a hold of Crystal and talk to her about this particular offering and how you can get involved. She just laid it out beautifully, but get more information. You can find her number there, journeymanstallions.com. And Crystal, can't thank you enough. Congratulations on putting this together, and what a wonderful gesture, and all the best on Tuesday. We'll be watching.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks so much, Crystal Fernung, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, that piece of artwork celebrating or benefiting the Florida Thoroughbred Charities and Marion Cultural Alliance, and you heard her talk about those two organizations, just spectacular, and well done by Crystal and Brent Fernung. All right, time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington. When I come back, it's time to get you ready to bet the races with today's First Bet, presented by First Bet, and my visit with consigner Eddie Woods, talking a little bit more about what you can expect from his consignment and what you can expect from all the 2-year-olds coming up at this year's OBS sale next week. That's all ahead right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
On October 27, 1974, at Woodbine in suburban Toronto, Canada, the 37th running of the Canadian International Championship Stakes over the testing distance of 13 furlongs was the feature race on the card. There were better than 25,000 fans on hand in typically resplendent autumn weather, with the foliage appearing as though Mother Nature had reached down with tender tendrils to paint the countryside in the splendiferous golden hues of the season. There was a young lady in the field who had already chalked up stakes scores in four different countries and was bidding to become the very first ever to have won stakes in five different countries. She was an elegant, lovely, statuesque young lady who simply exuded class, looked every bit the part, and she was a Kentucky bred. She was by Vaguely Noble out of Charming Alibi by Honey's Alibi and was racing in the silks of Nelson Bunker Hunt. She had won the Prix Yacoulef in France at two. At three, she had scored in the Irish Guinness Oaks, the King George VI and Queen Elizabeth Stakes in England, and the Prix Saint-Hilaire, the Prix de la Grotte, and the Prix Niais in France. And further, she had humiliated an outstanding field of international runners in the Washington, D.C. International, an invitational at Laurel Park in Maryland. At four, her age at the time of the event being recapitulated, she had won stakes in three countries: the Grand Prix de la Saint-Cloud in France, the King George and Queen Elizabeth Stakes, and the Benson and Hedges Gold Cup in England, and the Man of War Stakes right here in America. She was already a thoroughbred millionaireess, and this race, if she won it, would add another $91,000-plus to her already most imposing bankroll. She went postwards in this race at odds on, 85 cents to the dollar. Her bevy of backers were not the least bit disappointed with her effort this day. On a firm grass course, she toted her 123-pound impost to front-running fractions of 47-1 for a half, 137-3 for a mile, and a final time of 2:40 for the 1 5/8 miles, while winning with veritable ease. She had in the process clipped a full second off the course record for the distance set by X in 1963, and she went the distance in 1 4/5 seconds faster than Secretariat had done just the year before in his winning effort. She had become the world's leading money-winning distaffer and had pulled off something never done before in the entire illustrious annals of thoroughbred racing history. She won stakes races in five different countries: England, Ireland, France, America, and now Canada. She did have a nemesis, a la Noor to Citation, or affirmed to Aladar. That horse was named Ale France. The latter defeated our subject for this piece on all six occasions when they met over three racing seasons. Her lifetime statistics, 12 wins and 23 trips to the post, with composite earnings of better than $1,200,000, this classy lassie who personified elegance, grace, poise, and stature on the racetrack, who firmly planted her hoofmarks in the pages of Cronal racing history with capital letters and capped off a marvelous career with that win at Woodbine, October 27, 1974, was the great Dahlia.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at Lexus of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes every fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Grade 1 winner and track record setter Lee. Like their sire, his runners have excelled on both dirt and turf, including these standout performers.
And Dipping In will steal this one. Can you see it? Dipping In on top by Link.
Fastest in Queen Nakia. Here's the finish. Gibberish wins the treasure chest.
Out of a Galileo mare, this dual surface star has sired juvenile stakes winners on both dirt and turf. Lee, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Racing fans, you can watch every Santa Anita race free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via a variety of ADW platforms, including First Bet. That's first.com/bet. Join us online this Saturday as last year's Eclipse Champion 3-year-old filly Swiss Skydiver heads the Grade 1 $300,000 Beholder Mile. A winner of 5 out of 10 starts at 9 different racetracks in 2020, Swiss Skydiver won last year's Santa Anita Oaks in June second and went on to win three Grade 1 races, including the Preakness Stakes versus Kentucky Derby winner and eventual Horse of the Year, Authentic. Our co-feature on Saturday is the Grade 3 San Simeon for older horses at 6 furlongs on turf. With first post time Saturday at 12:30, join Tom Quigley and a special guest online at 11:20 a.m. as they handicap the entire 9-race card at SantaAnita.com/live.
Eddie Woods is a perennial leading consigner, having sold multiple Graded Stakes winners, including recent Grade 1 winner Cafe Faro in Japan.
It's Cafe Faro in front, Cafe Faro, and along the fence, Al Must. Cafe Faro, can this be American Faro's Japan first Group 1 winner? Yes, it is.
Eddie Woods' training graduates include 2020 Horse of the Year Authentic and Eclipse Champion Sprinter Whitmore. A passion for hard work that produces big-time results. Visit eddiewoods.com.
This is Steve Asmussen. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, taking you all the way up until 11 a.m. Eastern on the Equine Forum this morning. Our new format that launched a few weeks back. 3 hours of the Equine Forum every Saturday morning, 8 to 11 a.m. Eastern, and happy to have you along for the ride. It is time now to help you pick a winner as we take a look at today's First Bet, brought to you by our friends at First Bet.
And now, today's First Bet.
Today's First Bet comes in race 9 at Oaklawn Park, the Temperance Hill Stakes, which has a post time of 5:13 Eastern, 4:13 Central. Number 6, Treasure Trove, 12-1 on the morning line, has a 32% win projection and 53% place projection from First Bet, rates 17 points higher than any of his 9 rivals, and consistently ranks top 4 in 7 of the 10 most important First Bet factors for this race. Trainer Mike Maker, jockey Florent Giroux, provide strong connections, and he is 6-17 lifetime on dirt and offers a juicy morning line on the class rise. Number 6, Treasure Trove in race 9 at Oaklawn Park is today's First Bet. I'll be back right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years older in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Well, nobody knows better what it takes to be successful with the future stars of our sport than consigner Eddie Woods. He's done it for a very, very long time, and he'll be back in the spotlight again next week at the OBS 2-year-olds in training sale. Earlier, Eddie took time to visit with me and talk about his 2-year-olds and what it takes to be successful at a sale like this. Eddie, we are recording this interview Thursday following the first of 3 under tack shows. What did you see that impressed you from the horses you sent to the track this morning?
The track was very quick. There was a lot of quick works. Unfortunately, we didn't have anything that was crazy fast today. We've better stuff coming later in the week. But it was good to see the track as fair as it was today, because in times past, sometimes the first day the track's been a little slower than other days. So everyone's quite happy around here at the moment.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that you bring up. Buyers always seem to put a premium on speed, and the horses that breeze quickly tend to sell very well when they go into the auction ring. What are the other characteristics, other than speed and working quickly, do you look for in a young 2-year-old that give you a hint that the horse can turn out to be a pretty good runner?
Well, first of all, you need a really good physical. Got to look like an athlete, have the right shape. It has to vet really well. all across the board between scope and X-ray and any more ultrasounds. And they have to have a very good video. And modern technology allows people to play the videos at any speed they want. And, you know, and in slow motion, every error is magnified. Hence the need for a really good video.
When does the evaluation process actually begin for you and for your team?
As in for putting on a reserve or something like that, I presume you're talking?
Yeah, and kind of looking for that good
depends
physical.
Depends on who's looking at them, how much they get vetted. Yeah, you know, a lot of that, one of the other equations is pedigree and in particular star power and modern tastes and all that kind of stuff. But mainly you handicap your what you think of your clients and you go from there.
How about on the physical side of things? You mentioned that you want them to be a good physical. When does that process begin for you?
Last summer when we were buying them.
What are some of the things that you're looking for? You've had so much success, Eddie, over the years that this isn't just happen chance. What are some of the things that you're looking for that lead you to think, okay, this is the horse I want to sell as a two-year-old?
Well, they got to have a pretty precocious look to them, a good hip. They have good shoulder, good strong across their top, pretty head, and be pretty correct for the most part. You know, and then there's certain horses, certain, you know, certain sires and certain dam lines who throw certain traits, and you kind of learn what they are as you go along just by seen him year after year, and you'll go with little blemishes on some horses because this is what comes from this family, and you just try not to mess up too often.
I'm talking with consigner Eddie Woods here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. His consignment goes under the gavel at the OBS March sale next Tuesday and Wednesday. That's March 16th and 17th. Again, recording this interview on Thursday after the first of three Breeze shows. Eddie, you mentioned that you had some pretty good ones and some quick ones coming up over the next couple of days. Hit the highlights for me. Who are some of the horses you're excited about seeing when they go to the track?
Let me see. We have a Munnings filly that's very nice. We also have a couple of Gormleys that appear to be quick. Very nice Warfront colt. He's beautiful, actually, with a proper pedigree. Hip 202, nice Candy Ride, 259. There's an Uncle Mo, Derek Exambas Pass, 411. Got a couple of Uncle Mo's. One horse called Top Secret is a nice kind of horse. And a nice flatter colt.
And I'll remind people that they can go to your website to see photographs and video of all of the horses that you're going to be selling. It's eddiewoods.com, which I think is a fantastic website. Especially with people now with the COVID situation and people that might still be hesitant to come to the sale, you can just go to your website and they can pull up all of the information they need, can't they?
They can pull up anything anymore. There's so much stuff you can find online, you know, sitting on your underwear in the kitchen without having to move, you know, between the Breeze videos, walk videos, and then even the veterinarians have, you know, they can access the X-ray information from home also as long as they have a passcode.
Eddie, let's shift gears for a minute. Obviously, those horses will be front and center when they go to the track in the next couple of days and when they go under the gavel next week. But let's talk about the success of the other side of your business, the training program, the breaking and training. Most recently, Horse of the Year Authentic Champion Sprinter Whitmore coming through the program. And you've done this for years. This is nothing new. What's the secret, man? How do you do it?
Well, the secret is, you know, when you have good clients who buy nice horses and send you nice horses, the job gets a lot easier. And we're in the fortunate position with a fantastic set of clients. And fortunately, most of them, nearly all of them, want to play at the top end. So we get a lot of nice horses, a lot of well-bred, and a lot of expensive horses come through the farm. And makes it a lot easier.
Do you remember much about Authentic as a baby? Could you tell that he kind of had that factor?
Yeah, he was a nice horse. He's always, the good horses, for whatever reason, always appear to be nice. There's the very odd one that will creep up on you. Whitmore creeped up on us. But he was a big, backward, weak kind of baby, but he always moved beautifully, and he was always really quiet and good-natured and just very pleasant about the way he done stuff.
when you get a horse to the farm and you start working with them initially, how long does it take you to know if they can really run or they have the potential to be a good racehorse?
Well, you never know if they can really run. You know when you're screwed way quicker than you know you're good. you know, because the slow ones are slow from the get-go. And ones that don't have a whole lot of class or anything like that, they kind of let themselves down early. The good horses, we see a lot of potential. We've had a lot of horses come through the place that we thought were really, really nice horses, and it hasn't happened. You know, some of them went on to fancy stables and started 1-2 first time out and didn't hit the board, and everyone's scratching their head. And basically, you really don't know till the afternoons.
Yeah, until they get to the races and start doing their thing, it's really hard to know for sure. And that's the great thing about this game, right? We think we know. We put a lot of time and effort into studying these horses and these pedigrees, but you really, it's out of your hands. You really don't know until they get out there and do it in the afternoon.
No. With all the modern technology, heart monitored and measured in heart and stride length and everything like that, if it was a total exact science, for all intents and purposes, John Magner and on every good horse in the world.
Yeah.
He has the most money.
Yep. If it was that simple, that would be easy to do it that way. Eddie, what are some of the core philosophies that you've stuck to over the years that have allowed you to have this kind of success working with young horses?
Just don't do anything in a hurry. Take your time and just keep everything, you know, we run a very quiet operation, you know, very disciplined, and keep everything in control and just nice and slow and just creep into the thing rather than going flat out into it. You achieve nothing.
Well, everything you've done has worked over the years, Eddie, and I know that it will continue to work this year with the OBS March sale and then, of course, the Phasic Tipton Florida sale that comes up. You know, it's just been a great ride, and I can't thank you enough for your support and want to wish you all the best. We'll encourage people to go to eddiewoods.com to learn more about every horse that you're going to be selling next week, and good luck at the sale, Eddie.
Well, thank you very much, Mike.
A fantastic Eddie Woods here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, that website, you can go there, check it out. His website's fantastic, and he'll be among the top consigners, if not the top consigner again, coming up next week at OBS. I'll get to another break. I'll come back and get you set for the second hour of the program. That's next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
There's a corner of Kentucky in Bourbon County, which some refer to as the Promised Land. There's something in the soil and water that make it something special. So special that some of the world's greatest horsemen have staked their claim in the soil just outside of Paris. Iconic names such as Claiborne, Coolmore, Stone, and Darley grace the fence lines which have housed champions for generations. The name Alapa shines as a tribute to the Gilded Age, sharing the stature and grandeur of its neighbors. Born from the wealth, passion, and imagination of Edward Sims, no expense was spared to fulfill his vision. Sims was in the same league as John Madden and Arthur B. Hancock Sr. as a commercial breeder. The torch has been passed. Welcome to Hill and Dale at Alapa.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Gainesway Stallion Taprit. A $1.2 million yearling at Saratoga, Taprit's victories include the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes.
And they're into the stretch. Irish War Cry turns for home with Taprit trying to run him down in the last furlong. The two of them are now a half length apart. They are clear of Gormley and Patch. It is Irish War Cry. And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish Warcry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
In his first 2 years at stud, Taprit has bred over 240 mares. Now his first weanlings have arrived, selling for up to $100,000. One of the best bred sons of Cyrus Sires Tappet to ever enter stud. Classic winner and stakes record setter Taprit, standing at Gainesway.
As the COVID-19 vaccines become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help me get back to doing the things I love, like meeting friends or traveling? And can I do it without putting my family at risk? You've got questions. That's normal. So visit getvaccineanswers.org for the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Get in-depth handicapping advice on the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts, every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman look forward to all of the weekend's biggest stakes races and break down each one with expert analysis. Get a jump on the competition with the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts, Fridays at 6 on Sirius 219 XM 201 or streaming at horseracingradio.net.
This is Elliot Walden, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Songbird and Beholder, and they're into the stretch, and here we go. Songbird set down. Beholder is alongside. Forever Unbridled is 2.5 lengths behind them. Furlong to run. Songbird, Beholder, they are nose to nose. This race living up to its expected power as they come to the wire. They're nose to the park. It's Beholder. I think she got her head down on the wire. Songbird, Doggin, Gambling all the way. The two of them right together. And then came Forever Unbridled. The final time was 1 minute 49.20 seconds. I believe Beholder did it.
What a way to wrap up what will be a surefire Hall of Fame career. Beholder, a gutsy win in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. Larry Colmus had the call back in 2016. You think about what Beholder accomplished. 18 wins from 26 starts, more than $6.1 million in earnings. She certainly was special for Hall of Fame trainer Richard Mandela, Hall of Fame jockey Gary Stevens, and owners Spendthrift Farm. And today we celebrate Beholder at Santa Anita with the Grade 1 stakes race. And that race is going to feature another really top filly in Swiss Skydiver. Now, she might not be in the category of a Beholder quite yet, but she is a classic winner. She beat the boys in the Preakness, eventual Horse of the Year Authentic, going down to defeat that day. And looking forward to seeing Swiss Skydiver getting back in action later this afternoon. Going to visit with her trainer, Ken McPeak, coming up right around 10:40 Eastern time this morning in the final hour of the program. Again, 3 hours of the Equine Forum once again here this morning. Don't forget that I recently started telling you about a brand-new outdoors superstore, the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore. And I have spent my entire life pursuing two passions, horse racing and the outdoors. And as many of you know, when I'm not at the racetrack or on the radio, it's a pretty solid bet that I'm in the woods somewhere or maybe sitting in Heinz Field at the Pittsburgh Steelers game. But trust me when I tell you, if you love hunting or fishing, you need to check out Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoors Superstore. It's in Nicholasville, Kentucky, just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road, owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley. So it's cool. You can talk some horses with them, talk some hunting. The Elite Outdoor Superstore has everything you need for hunting deer, turkey, ducks, and so much more. They even have two indoor archery ranges. So stop in and see them today. It's the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. I was actually down there this past week and picked up a couple of tree stands and a ground blind. And, yeah, they have some great products there. So make sure you stop in. All kinds of clothing, too, by the way. So make sure you stop in and see them down there in Nicholasville. All right, hour number two begins with John Green of DJ Stables. That comes up to kick it off. He'll look back on Helium's big win in last weekend's Tampa Bay Derby. I will do that when I return, right after I pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, with this week's HRRN Racing Update. The Arlington Million has a new name and a purse cut for what could be the final running of the event this August 14th at Arlington Park. Now known as the Mr. D Stakes, in honor of former racetrack owner Richard Dusserswaugh, the purse for this year's event will be $600,000. It was the first ever million-dollar race for thoroughbreds when it was run for the first time back in 1981. The Secretariat has also been renamed and is now the Bruce D, in honor of Dusserswaugh's late son. They joined the Beverly D, named for Richard's late wife, on the stakes-packed card. This past Thursday, the Dubai Racing Club announced that the Dubai World Cup, canceled last year due to the onset of COVID-19, will be held without fans this year due to the ongoing pandemic. The event will remain open to a limited number of horse connections, racing officials, accredited media, and sponsors. Just one day earlier, Tacitus was withdrawn from the event due to a stall mishap. That's your HRRN Racing Update. Now let's send it back to host Mike Penna for Hour 2 of the Equine Forum.
Back, hour number two of the Equine Forum, rolling on, busy morning. If you missed any portion of the first hour of the program, and if you miss any of the Equine Forum shows, you can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast. Crystal Fernung and Eddie Woods, all part of the first half of the program. Now, coming up in hour number two, John Green, the owner of DJ Stables. His resume speaks for itself in the sport of thoroughbred racing. He's been in the game for a long time and has had a ton of success, including Helium winning the Tampa Bay Derby last week. We'll talk more about that in a minute. Kurt Becker will take a stroll through racing history with me at 9:20 Eastern. That's an extended segment, by the way, as Kurt not only brings you his weekly segment, but joins me for a live interview to talk about a couple of other individuals that have played a major role in the history of our sport. Trainer Pete Miller going to be with me at 9:45 Eastern time. And then hour three kicking off with In the Room with Sean Clancy, his one-on-one interview with jockey Drayden Van Dyke, and that's something you won't want to miss. Bobby Newman at 10:25 Eastern and Ken McPeak coming up at 10:40. So an awful lot of things to get to, but we begin the second half of the program with our industry star of the week, brought to you every week by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation and wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years that include Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, and South Bend, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. Well, last Saturday at Tampa Bay Downs, a horse by Helium stormed to victory in the Tampa Bay Derby, and it sounded like this.
Helium now strikes to the lead. Along the rail, that's Candyman Rocket racing along second. Way out on the outside, Hidden Stash is absolutely in full stride. Down to the wire, it's Hidden Stash and Rafael Bayerano along the rail. Digging back, gamely is Helium. Looks like we're down to two. Helium repels the challenge. It's Helium in a huge effort. Turns away the challenge of Hidden Stash. Finishing third was Moonlight Strike, and fourth was Unbridled Honor.
Richard Grunder with the call. Helium repelled every challenge and remained undefeated. A perfect 3-for-3. Now has his sights set on the first Saturday in May for owner Jonathan Green, who is the general manager of DJ Stable, a stable that has been in the business for more than 30 years. They have amassed 2 Sovereign Awards, 1 Eclipse Award, 14 leading owners titles, and over 2,400 victories. And he's quick to point out over 10,000 losses. You have to have your big boy pants on when you play the game of thoroughbred racing. And John Green is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. John, good morning. Congratulations.
Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on the show. And I'll tell you, hearing that race call never gets old.
Yeah, let's go back to that for a minute. Put me with you as you're watching the race. Number one, were you there? And if not, where were you watching it?
No, unfortunately, because of COVID restrictions, I've pretty much been chained to my desk up here in New Jersey for almost a year now. So I've been doing a lot of this stuff remotely. I'm almost starting to think that maybe the horses are running well because they don't have the added pressure of having the owners there. But we were watching it very closely on TV. My parents were, in their house in New Jersey, and I was here in my house. And, the first half of the race, I really wasn't sure if the horse was actually translating well from the all-weather track up at Woodbine, to the deep racetrack at Tampa. But he seemed to, Jose Ferrer did a great job of finding the right strip for him. He seemed to, really start to, to gain some traction. And then the rest was history. At that point, the horse, just his talent alone, got into the finish line first. But it was about as exciting of a win. And you alluded to the fact we've had, we've been fortunate enough to have a lot. It was probably about as exciting of a win as I've had, in our history. And that includes, a Breeders' Cup win and an Eclipse champion. So he's in rarefied air, no pun intended.
Yeah, and he came into the race 2-for-2, but as you mentioned, his first start on a conventional dirt racing surface after competing at Woodbine in his first two starts, he was 15-1. John, were you surprised to see him on the tote board at that price?
Not really. I mean, here's a horse that although he was undefeated, there was a lot of questions as to would he be able to make the transition, to a dirt racetrack. Would he be able to go two turns? Would he be able to win after a 4.5-month layoff? So I understand why the betting public was looking to other horses. And Candyman Rocket at that point hadn't done anything wrong, to warrant being the favorite. Hidden Stash, who ran second to us, certainly is a very capable horse, a good son of Constitution. And there were other horses in the race. I think Pletcher even had a horse, an Honor Code, that had won impressively on that racetrack at Tampa. So there were a lot of, legitimate horses in the race. One of the reasons why, Mike, we picked the Tampa Bay Derby for the beginning of his three-year-old campaign was because we did some analytics on who was running, up in New York and who was going to run in the fairgrounds and at Arkansas, this weekend in the Rebel. And we just felt like that was the best landing spot for Helium, not only because there was, the competition in the other races looked much tougher, but also it was just an easier transition for him to go from Palmettos on a quick van ride to Tampa as opposed to shipping him somewhere else in the countryside. And we weren't sure if he was going to be able to, check all those boxes and accomplish all those things that he did in the weekend.
And now that he did, he earned 50 points for the victory, putting him squarely into the field on the first Saturday in May. That takes a lot of pressure off, John. What do we do from here? You have options, but what's the plan going forward?
Yeah, and Mike, we've done a lot of analytics. Again, my dad is an accountant and by trade. I'm a financial planner by trade. So we're very involved in not only, studying the numbers and studying the analytics that are, in the industry, but also trying to think creatively as business people as well. And as you know, horses are very fragile, and they only have a certain shelf life to them. You only are given a certain number of races, before either they don't peak anymore or God forbid you get an injury or something like that where they can't, compete at that high level. So we are taking a less, traveled road, and we're actually going to train him into the Kentucky Derby. We are not going to run him again in any other preps. As you mentioned, he's got his 50 points, so that should be more than enough to get him into the starting gate for the Kentucky Derby. And, we feel like that we can train him. Mark Cassie has done this before, where he's trained good horses off the bench and had them peak for certain races, most recently with Helium, where he came off the bench off of almost a 5-month layoff. And we just really feel like that, now we kind of we're playing with house money, and we have an opportunity to gradually get him into the Kentucky Derby without, going through any more, difficult preps. And they are difficult. I mean, the talent level of this 3-year-old group is tremendous. So if we can keep on a winning streak and we can keep the horse confident and sound, and and just train him into the Kentucky Derby. I know it's unconventional, but we feel like that's the best route for this horse.
Talking with owner John Green, DJ Stable, the owners of Helium, who won the Tampa Bay Derby last weekend. You just heard the call. John told you about the strategy going forward. John, as I introduced you, I went through some of the accolades and the success that you have experienced in this business, and there has been a lot of it. The one thing I didn't talk about was the fact that you have been part of over 150 stakes wins. So this just another one to add to the resume, and it's a big one. To look ahead to the first Saturday in May and think, oh my gosh, we're coming here with a horse that is undefeated and really, let's call it what it is, has a live shot at wearing the roses after that race. Does that even end? Do you let yourself go there and go that far ahead?
you know, Mike, you have to be a dreamer to be in this business, and you have to, you know, when your head hits the pillow at night, your last thought is usually about your good horse. And when you wake up in the morning, you jump out of bed when you have a top horse, or you have, you know, an undefeated horse, or I think there's an old saying in racing that a trainer will never commit suicide as long as he's got an undefeated 2-year-old in his barn. and I think you have to be hopeful, and you have to be, you know, dreaming of those opportunities. We're still 7 weeks away, you know, from that magic day, and so many things can happen because they're not race cars. You know, they're athletes. They're animals. And, you know, sometimes they get sick. Sometimes they get injured. I mean, you know, Helium Alone, one of the reasons why he ended up in the Tampa Bay Derby was because we were going to run him, you know, in Canada in the Gray Stake. And there was a freak snowstorm in November. And then they tried to reschedule the race, and it got canceled again for COVID purposes. We shipped him down to Louisiana, and he wrenched an ankle just doing a maintenance breeze. And that's the reason why he wasn't originally nominated for the Triple Crown, because we weren't sure he was going to make it back. Thankfully, you know, through some great training and you know, management on Mark Cassie's side, he was able to come back and come back with a flourish. So I think you really can't get too far ahead of yourself as far as, you know, the day-to-day operations and what you're trying to accomplish with this horse. But, man, I'd be lying to you if I said I wasn't thinking about it all the time.
Yeah, I know you have horses with several trainers, Mark Cassie being one of them. You have Chad Brown that trains for you, Todd Pletcher, Linda Rice, Joe Orsino, and Rick Schossberg. Your phone rings. You look down and you see Mark Cassie's name. Do you hesitate to answer it, or do you jump right at it?
I think I've learned after all these years that you have to jump in headlong. thankfully, you know, Mark and I talk on such a regular basis that usually if it's bad news, he'll text me in advance and say, hey, John, I need to talk to you. And that's when your stomach drops, is when you see that text that says, it's almost like getting called to the principal's office. You know, it's like, oh no, what did I do? What's going on? and Mike, you know, we talk about being involved in all aspects of the business and the racing and breeding side and the selling side as well. And, you know, that morning, the morning of the Tampa Bay Derby, Mark actually sent me a text like that saying, hey, we need to talk. And my thoughts immediately went to Helium. And I called him, and fortunately for Helium, it wasn't a call about him. Unfortunately, one of our, you know, 2-year-olds that we bought as a yearling that we had very high expectations for, actually had a heart attack on the racetrack and died that morning. So we went from the lowest of lows with a horse of ours, you know, having a fatal heart attack, to the highest of highs of winning a Grade Two and possibly, you know, running a horse in the Kentucky Derby, and that's just in a 12-hour period. So you have to have really thick skin. You have to be able to roll with the punches because, just as you mentioned earlier on, you know, we've been fortunate enough to win 2,400 races, but we've lost 10,000, and you have to be able to be a good winner and a good loser, because you're going to lose a lot more than you're going to win.
How did you initially become introduced or become involved with Helium, John?
So Helium was a horse that actually, again, COVID, you know, was involved in all this. My parents are in their early 80s and they're very active at the sales usually. But for health reasons, you know, we decided not to go to the sales, and the 2-year-old sales for the most part were getting pushed off in the calendar, just like a lot of the races were getting pushed off in the calendar. So we called a client of my father's who I've known for 20 years, Bo Hunt, and we've had great relationship with Bo. And, you know, we said to Bo, look, we're probably not going to come for the sales when they are offered. Are there a couple of horses on your farm that you like? And he picked out a handful of horses, including Helium and also Miss Brazil, who just, you know, won a stake and just ran second in another stake over the weekend. We were able to come to an agreement on a price on Helium and kind of the rest is history. But Mike, it really comes down to, you know, you have to have the right horse, but you also have to have the right people guiding you through this process. And there's, you know, it's still an unregulated business, and there's a lot of, you know, bad people in the business that are unscrupulous, but there are a lot of phenomenal people in the business that will try to steer you in the right direction. And you know, between the trainers you mentioned that we use, and Bo Hunt and Pug Hart, who's our vet that works on a lot of our horses for us, those are just people that we've lined up on our team that give us some great insight and advice. And then it's up to us to decide if we want to move forward with the advice. But at least I know that we're getting an honest chance, you know, with some of these horses. And then it's up to the horse as to whether or not he or she can fulfill their promise.
Yeah, well, it's like anything else. You just surround yourself with good people, and you can be successful doing it that way, and you certainly have. Talking with owner John Green here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, DJ Stable, the owners of Tampa Bay Derby winner and Kentucky Derby hopeful Helium. John, I have about 2 minutes left before I have to get to the next commercial break, but spend just a couple of minutes taking me back to the beginning. How did you first become introduced to horse racing and get involved in the sport?
Yeah, and Mike, the real simple story is a neighbor of ours brought us to nearby Monmouth Park, and they had a $5,000 claimer. I was about 8 years old and went to the track, and I remember getting a hot dog and a soda and watching the horse win, and my dad, you know, gave me a $20 bill because he bet on the horse. And we were driving home, and my dad said, "Did you have a good time?" And I said, "Yeah, it was great. You know, I got a hot dog. I got to go into the winner's circle. I mean, you know, I got a little money in my pocket. What could be better than that?" And he said, "Yeah, you know, if he can do it, you know, imagine if we really treated it as a business, how we can do it." And my dad spent the next 9 to 12 months studying the all exciting tax code on horse racing, and he ended up finding a lot of interesting patterns and opportunities to buy horses. We started a claiming stable, developed it into a stakes stable, and now you know, a couple of champions and 2,400 wins later. You know, we're still kind of standing in the business. So I think you have to be willing to be creative. You have to be willing to be, you know, innovative, maybe unorthodox. And I know this is an unorthodox move of taking Helium and not running any more preps. But it's not the first time we've done something unorthodox and against the grain in the industry. And, you know, hopefully we'll be standing in the winner's circle that first weekend of May.
Well, John, I certainly hope so. All the best moving forward with Helium and all the horses that you have around the country. Good luck, and thanks for spending a little time with me here this morning. Really do appreciate it.
No, it was my pleasure, Mike, and I'm hoping that I'll be asked to come back, you know, sometime in the week between the Derby and the Preakness.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe even Derby week. We'll get you back on again, and we'll get a recap of Helium and how he's doing leading up to the Derby. Appreciate it, brother.
That sounds great. Thanks, Mike. Really, really enjoy the show. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, John Green, DJ Stable, here on HRRN. That interview, like all of our interviews here on the program, brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. When I come back, we'll take a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker, an extended segment, as Kurt joins me live after his weekly segment to tell you about a couple of other individuals who have played a major role in the history of our sport. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. They're off in the Preakness. They're off in the Belmont Stakes.
You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Triple Crown.
Eddie Woods is a perennial leading consigner, having sold multiple graded stakes winners, including recent Grade 1 winner Cafe Faro in Japan.
It's Cafe Faro in front, Cafe Faro, and along the fence, AL Master, Cafe Faro. Can this be American Faro's Japan first Group 1 winner? Yes, it is.
Eddie Woods' training graduates include 2020 Horse of the Year Authentic and Eclipse Champion Sprinter Whitmore. A passion for hard work that produces big-time results. Visit eddiewoods.com.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince is the leading third crop sire by number of stakes winners, stakes horses, graded stakes winners, and graded stakes horses. He's also a top five general sire by the number of two-year-old winners so far in 2020. And his current crop of yearlings is his first conceived at a $25,000 stud fee. Yearlings from Cairo Prince's fourth crop sold for up to $400,000 this year, underlining his incredible commercial appeal. At $15,000 stands and nurses for 2021, Cairo Prince's value in the extreme, standing at Airdrie Stud. Think about it.
Oscar Performance, the pinnacle of success as a precocious juvenile, and again at 3.
Oscar Performance, bravo! He wins the juvenile turf.
Oscar Performance has won the Secretary of State's.
Oscar Performance goes all the way in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
And the pinnacle of success at 4, equaling the world record for a mile in the Grade 3 poker and dominating the competition in the Grade 1 Woodbine Mile.
But it's Oscar Performance shrugs them off. A gate-to-wire winner.
Oscar Performance, standing at Millridge.
Hello, this is Steve Cawthon, winner of the Triple Crown 1978 aboard Affirmed, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Here they come into the stretch of the Apple Blossom Handicap. Take charge, Lady the Leader. Champion Azaria is taking over second. Mandy's Gold is third in, straightened for the run through the lane. It is Take Charge Lady leading at a length. Azaria digging in with a furlong to go. Take Charge Lady leads it. Azaria's trying to get to her. Take Charge Lady is strong. Azaria, the champion, trying one more time. Here she comes down the middle. The champion Azaria, and she does it! A tremendous finish.
Wow, the late Terry Wallace with the call of the 2003 Apple Blossom at Oaklawn Park. That was the second of three consecutive victories in the race for champion and Hall of Famer Azaria. How good was she? Simply brilliant, and she is an integral part of thoroughbred racing history. Today we celebrate Azaria with the Azaria Stakes at Oaklawn, and rightfully so. She deserves to have a stakes race in her name, and she deserves all the accolades that come her way. Kurt Becker is going to join me shortly to tell you a little bit more about Azaria, and we'll talk about the Rebel Stakes in some respects in terms of the all-time leading owners in the history of the Rebel. But first, it is time to take you on our weekly stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. She was owned in France, bred in Ireland, and she just missed being a St. Patrick's Day baby, having been foaled on March 15, 2005. Today, we remember three-time Breeders' Cup mile winner, Goldakova. Described as small but mighty, and with an aggressive disposition in the barn but a pleasant demeanor on the racetrack, Goldakova was a homebred who raced in the blue and white silks of Alain and Gerard Wertheimer, grandsons of the co-founder of the Chanel House of Fashion. The family had bred and raced the filly's first four dams, including third dam Gold River, who in 1981 had beaten males in the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe. Goldakova's sire was Annabaugh, who was European champion sprinter in 1996. Goldakova's jockey, Olivier Pellier, was a four-time riding champion in France, and her trainer was Freddie Head, who during his own time in the saddle had notched six riding titles in France, but was best known to American racing fans as the jockey who had ridden Miesque to back-to-back wins in the Breeders' Cup Mile in the 1980s. The team behind Goldakova was one of world-class credentials, and they had a growing confidence in Goldakova, who had won her only two starts as a juvenile at Chanty, had raced in the shadow of eventual ARC winner Zarkova early in her three-year-old season, but seemed literally to be hitting her best stride by the time she shipped to the United States for the 2008 Breeders' Cup at Santa Anita. Goldakova arrived in California on the strength of back-to-back Group 1 wins over males in France, first at Deauville and then at Longchamp. She was 5-for-7 in her young career at the one-mile distance. It was enough to make her the 9-to-5 favorite in the 2008 Breeders' Cup Mile, and she did not disappoint. Trevor Denman described her memorable stretch run.
Kip DeVille is let loose, but Goldakova goes through at the rail. And look at the acceleration from Goldakova as she bursts forward. And what a brilliant filly is this. Goldakova in an awesome effort outrun Kip DeVille to win it well.
That performance alone would have been enough to give Goldakova a place in Breeders' Cup history. But she was just getting warmed up. As a four-year-old in 2009, Goldakova won three consecutive Group 1 races in Europe before seeing that string snapped with a third-place finish in the Prix de la Forêt. Unlike the prior year, she would be entering the Breeders' Cup off a losing effort, but the Cup would once again be held at Santa Anita, where she had already proved that she liked the turf. Goldakova was dispatched as the 7-5 favorite, a slightly shorter price than her post-time odds in 2008. And this time, her effort would be even more impressive.
Goldakova is coming home like an express train down the center. Courageous Cat running a huge one. Goldakova's going to have to switch out a little. She does so, though. Coming with a late run, just enough humor. But Goldakova is just scintillating. Goldakova is something special. Goldakova and Olivia Paley win it again.
Despite finding herself eighth on the turn for home, Goldakova had rallied down the stretch to duplicate the feat of the great Miesque. She had won back-to-back editions of the Breeders' Cup Mile. And still, the best was yet to come. In 2010, this time with Churchill Downs as the setting, Goldakova again came to the United States for the Breeders' Cup. At her shortest price yet, she went to the post as the 6-5 favorite. Once again, Trevor Denman with the call.
Goldakova's left loose, she's flying. Sydney's Candy, the usual QT's in there as well. But Goldakova's catching with each and every stride. Are we to see history this afternoon? Here's Paco Boy late. But no, Goldakova, a true champion. 3 Breeders' Cup wins. Olivia Pellier, the perfect ride. Goldakova has won.
Goldakova had scored the first three-peat in Breeders' Cup history, winning the mile for the third consecutive year. After a third-place finish to Longshot Court Vision on Breeders' Cup weekend in 2011, Goldakova was retired from racing with 17 wins in 27 starts and earnings of $7 million. Her 17 victories included 14 at the Group or Grade 1 level. Freddie Head summarized her career when he said, quote, "She could do anything. She won all over the world, in France, in Britain, in the States, over all sorts of trips and on straight courses and turning courses. She had everything an athlete could have, and she always had another gear," end quote. Goldakova died recently on January 5th, 2021, at the age of 16. But the legacy of the great Irish-bred filly lives on, including her memorable impact on the Breeders' Cup. Please join me again next week when I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Well, yet another fantastic feature from our good friend Kurt Becker, who you hear on the network. You hear him at Keeneland when he's on the auction stand, and you hear him in the announcer's booth as well. He has been there as the only announcer Keeneland has ever known as a full-time announcer, and he is simply spectacular in that role. He's great at bringing you those stories every week, and he joins me now live here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kurt, appreciate the visit. Fantastic job with Goldakova.
Mike, I appreciate that. Yeah, she had crossed my mind really just because of the time of the year, the fact she's Irish bred, and we've got St. Patrick's Day coming up. And as we mentioned in the piece, she was actually foaled on March 15. So she's one of those fillies or mares that you look back on and even many years later still fondly remember her performances.
Yeah, she was brilliant, as was Azari, who I mentioned before I introduced your feature piece this week. Azari winning the Apple Blossom at Oaklawn Park 3 consecutive years. She, of course, was so brilliant in many of her career starts. You, my friend, had the privilege to call Azari in her final career victory, the Overbrook Spinster Stakes back in 2004 at Keeneland. That had to be special for you.
Well, it really was, and I remember being very nervous about it. I don't know at that point in my career how many times I had had a chance to call a horse who had on a prior occasion been named Horse of the Year. And I was excited. I was uptight. And I think, like a lot of folks, I was curious because Azari had had her ups and downs throughout 2004. That was her final season at the races, of course, and she had had some struggles. The connections had a lot of faith in her, and there were so many times throughout that year when she would get beat. I think she lost 3 in a row at one point. She wasn't getting beaten by much, but she had lost a few races in New York, as I recall. But the connections, they remained faithful to her, and then she justified that confidence. Really, I don't think she was ever really asked to run that day in the Spinster. She made a nice move on the far turn and got into position. I think Pat Day was aboard for that race. And I don't think Pat really ever did more than just maybe just show her the whip once or twice I don't think he even really ever had to get after her, and she just drew off and won.
Yeah, she was a prohibitive favorite that day. And when you look at the competition that she beat, names like Tam Wheel and Mayo on the side, those were the horses that finished second and third respectively behind Azari in that Spencer Stakes. Nice fillies, but they weren't the caliber of a horse like Azari. She would go on in her next start at Lone Star Park in the Breeders' Cup Classic facing the males. She would be beaten that day. That was her final start, and it wrapped up what was a completely brilliant career. But, Kurt, I sent you a text yesterday, and I said, geez, take a look at the field that she faced in the Breeders' Cup Classic that year in 2004. Ghost Sapper won it over Roses in May. Pleasantly Perfect was third. Perfect Drift was fourth. That field was loaded.
Yeah, it really was. That was not a field for the faint of heart, as the saying goes. And I remember that race because it seems like so often over the years, and especially up until that time, the Breeders' Cup would take place typically on a November Saturday, and that particular year, the Breeders' Cup Classic was actually run on October 30th. And with the name Ghost Sapper ending up winning the race, I remember the media kind of got a kick out of that with Halloween coming up the next day. But yeah, you know, that was a field that was a big, bulky field, as one usually finds. Funnyside was in there. Of course, he'd been sharper arguably the year earlier, but yet he was still a competitive type of horse. Bert Stone was in there, who had won the Belmont earlier that same season. Pleasantly Perfect, who you mentioned, who was a defending champion in the race. So Azari, you know, you go back and you can look at it two ways. You can say, well, she was fifth, she ran off the board. But then you look at the fact that here was the final start of her career. She had proved herself so tough for so long. And really to be fifth in that 13-horse field was really a testament to her ability.
Yeah, very well said. Visiting with Keeneland announcer and HRN colleague Kurt Becker here on the Equine Forum on HRRN. Kurt, let's shift gears for a minute to the Rebel. And, you know, that the Stroll Through Racing History segments that you produce every week always feature a horse or a human connection that has had an impact in the history of our sport. Well, maybe no ownership group, there are very few ownership groups that have had the impact of Loblolly Stable, who are the owners of five Rebel Stakes winners. That's the most of any owner in history. John Ed Anthony, who is the principal of Loblolly, is now the principal of Shortleaf Stable, who are the owners of this year's favorite, Caddo River. Great to see John Ed Anthony still having success at the highest levels, but when you think back on the success he had with Loblolly, that was a stable, Kurt, that was as good as they come.
Well, it's really been a tremendous history, as you said, Mike, for John Ed Anthony. When he raced under the name of Loblolly, a record five wins as an owner in the Rebel Stakes. And this is a man whose family roots in Arkansas go back to the 1830s. That's when his ancestors actually came to settle in Arkansas. So for John Ed Anthony, with that kind of connection to Arkansas and of course still a resident there himself, it is really significant for him. And here's a guy who's won Triple Crown races. He's won the Belmont. He's won the Preakness as an owner. But I think winning in Hot Springs still means a tremendous amount to him. And with Caddo River, I think there's one other aspect to the story there, Mike, this would be a very sentimental win if indeed Caddo River can win the Rebel. It's going to be a tough chore. I mean, he's the morning line favorite, but it's a tough bunch. But for many years, John Ed Anthony would send his mares to be foaled at the Longfield Farm near Louisville, Kentucky. And, of course, Longfield, the operation of Dr. and Mrs. Gary Lavin. Well, Dr. Lavin passed away just a couple of weeks ago at the end of February. He was 83 years old. He and John Ed Anthony had a working relationship for many, many years in the business. As I recall, when Pine Bluff won the Preakness Stakes, I mean, we're going back several years, early 1990s, I think that John Ed Anthony couldn't help but have a little fun with that. And in the press conference after the race, he said, well, he said a 502 horse, meaning area code 502, has won a Triple Crown race. And he was having some good-natured fun with the folks in the Lexington area, pointed to the fact Pine Bluff had been folded at Longfield Farm in Goshen, Kentucky. But there's a lot of sentimentality and a lot of nostalgia that go along with Caddo River and his upcoming run in the Rebel.
Yeah, and it's great to see John Ed Anthony still in the business and still, you know, enjoying the business at a very high level. You think back to his very first win in the Rebel, his first of those record five that you just referenced, Temperance Hill back in 1980 under jockey Daryl Hare, who now does a lot of work with the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund and the Jockeys Guild. Joe Canty was the trainer, but Temperance Hill really kickstarted everything for Loblolly.
He did, and Temperance Hill went on from that win in the Rebel and ended up winning the Belmont Stakes at a pretty big price that year. And Temperance Hill is a horse that epitomizes not only the success that Loblolly had and John Ed Anthony has had in the horse business, but also the name. Someone pointed out to me recently, I'd always been curious about the name Temperance Hill, and someone told me that, well, the name went back, I think, maybe to a church or a congregation in Arkansas where Mr. Anthony's ancestors had been members. And so he named the horse Temperance Hill in honor of that church. And as a lot of folks are aware, he often pays tribute to the names of his horses to geographic sites around the state of Arkansas. In fact, I will admit, I'm not familiar with Caddo River, and I haven't looked it up, but if history holds true, I'm guessing that you could probably find the Caddo River somewhere in Arkansas.
Yeah, I bet you could, and I haven't looked that up either. But you better familiarize yourself with that horse, Kurt, if we're going to be together on our exclusive national broadcast of the Kentucky Derby in, 49 days from today. Because Caddo River is a horse that looks like he's a major player, and we're probably going to see him beneath the Twin Spires.
Yeah, he does, and he's been brought along carefully. I like the fact that that Brad Cox, the trainer, has been really a conservative in his approach with this horse. And I think a big point in his favor is the fact that this is a horse that comes into this race in the Rebel already with a win at Oak Lawn Park in a listed stakes race at a mile, so stretches out just a bit to a mile and a 16th. But the fact he's had a recent race, the fact he's had a stakes win over the track, and then, Mike, to your point, if you look further down the road, and I know it's the horse business, we got to be careful about that. We got to take it one week at a time. But it is intriguing to think about the fact that as a two-year-old, this is a horse who ran at Belmont Park and was runner-up in a maiden special, and then in November at Churchill Downs broke his maiden. So he's a horse that already has some familiarity and some level of success with two of the three tracks in the Triple Crown Series.
He's Kurt Becker, and every week you can catch him with our Stroll Through Racing History presented by Keeneland and Lane's End. Kurt, those segments have added so much to the program. Can't thank you enough for all your work and dedication to putting those together. I truly enjoy them. I know so many of our listeners do. And before I let you go, you had referenced the fact that Goldakova was nearly a St. Patrick's Day baby. Well, you are, my friend, so your birthday coming up this week. Happy birthday, Kurt Becker.
My God, I appreciate that very much. It's always a fun time of year. St. Patrick's Day seems to be one of those days when everybody has fun and is in a good mood. So let's hope for the best for everyone coming up in a few days on St. Patrick's Day. And I want to tell you, Mike, before we go, regarding the history of horse racing, one of my favorite tools to use, your friends at BrizNet, they have got some incredible resources. If I need to look up some history, I don't care if it's pedigrees or racing history, I really love using BrizNet, and I love talking about it because I know they're in your family of sponsors, and you hang out with some good folks, my friend.
Yeah, they're tremendous. They do a great job, as do you. Kurt Becker here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kurt, appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend, and we will talk again soon, my friend.
Mike, that sounds good. Always fun to catch up.
A little stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker here on HRRN. Going to get to another break. I'll come back and talk more about the Rebel Stakes with trainer Pete Miller. That follows our Calling All Three-Year-Old segment presented by Spendthrift. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care Products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Justify, a four-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the three-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available.
Broken Vow, a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include the Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Eddie Woods is a perennial leading consigner, having sold multiple graded stakes winners, including recent Grade 1 winner, Cafe Faro in Japan.
It's Cafe Faro in front, Cafe Faro, and along the fence, Hail Master, Cafe Faro, can this be American Faro's Japan first Group 1 winner? Yes, it is.
Eddie Woods' training graduates include 2020 Horse of the Year Authentic and Eclipse Champion Sprinter, Whitmore. A passion for hard work that produces big-time results. Visit eddiewoods.com.
Hi, I'm Leah Jarmati, and I love listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
As Get Her Number has the lead, Touchdown Brown is second to last. They turn for home, Get Her Number, and Rombauer go on with it. These two arrive at the top of the stretch, 1-2, and Get Her Number strong on the front end, chased intently by Rombauer. Three lengths back to Spielberg in third, a 16th to go. Flavien Prat imploring Get Her Number to finish the job, and he is going to do it. It's Get Her Number to win the American Faro. Rombauer a solid second. Spielberg was third. Wasprint was fourth.
Yeah, keep an eye on Get Her Number later today in the Rebel. That effort and Frank Miramati with the call, that winning effort in the Grade 1 American Faro last September at Santa Anita was impressive. It was a gutsy win. I know that the margin of victory wasn't as impressive as, say, a Caddo River, who won by 10 last time out, but Get Her Number certainly showed plenty of talent and tenacity in that win. And if he continues to develop over the winter, or has continued to develop, then he's a horse that rates some respect, not just today, but moving forward as well. And, of course, owned by Gary Barber, who has been on a roll the past 12 months or so. Going to be joined by Pete Miller to talk about Get Her Number, making his return later today. But first, it is time to call all three-year-olds with Bobby Newman, presented by Spendthrift.
They're all in line. And they're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
There were five stakes for three-year-olds on the Kentucky Derby Trail last week, three stateside, each worth 50 points to the winners, and two in Europe, each worth 20 points to the winners. Let's start out west, where Santa Anita held the Grade 2 San Felipe. Bob Baffert's undefeated colt Life Is Good was sent off the overwhelming 1-2 favorite, and he did not disappoint. He fired out to a clear early lead, cruised along unthreatened up the backstretch, then pulled away down the lane to win by 8. He stopped the clock in a flashy 142 flat for the mile and a 16th and continues to look like one of the top three-year-olds in the land. Tampa Bay Downs held their marquee event, the Grade 2 Tampa Bay Derby. Candyman Rocket was favored off a game win in the Sam F. Davis, but he was really never a factor. Instead, it was a spirited stretch duel between undefeated Woodbine Invader Helium and the stakes-placed Hidden Stash. They both closed from far back early, but in the lane, Helium was tenacious and just refused to let Hidden Stash by, scoring by just under a length. Trainer Mark Cassie said Helium would likely train up to the Kentucky Derby for his next start. At Aqueduct, most of the attention in the Grade 3 Gotham was given to stakes winner Highly Motivated and SoCal Invader Freedom Fighter. But it was the long shot Weyburn who stole the show, out-dueling Crowded Trade late to prevail at 46-1. Time for the mile was 1:38.3. We'll see if the Jimmy Jerkins trainee heads down the Derby trail or stays at the shorter distances. In Europe, both Highland Avenue and My Generation won stakes offering Derby points at Kempton and Dundalk, respectively. One huge stake for three-year-olds today, it's the Grade 2 $1 million Rebel Stakes at Oaklawn Park. Caddo River crushed the Smarty Jones field in his last start and drew the advantageous inside post. He'll face the undefeated Concert Tour, who tries two turns for the first time, and he's bred to run all day. There's also Keep Me in Mind, who was last seen capturing the Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club as a two-year-old, and Grade 1 winner Get Her Number, also making his three-year-old debut. This field is stacked. I'll be back with this week's top five list right after this word from Spendthrift.
Lord Nelson, one of only three sprinters last decade to win three Grade 1s in a single year, along with champions Run Happy and Mitoli. His three consecutive Grade 1 victories included a stakes record performance in 107 3/5 in Del Mar's historic Bing Crosby Stakes.
Lord Nelson, a dominating performance, easy in the Bing Crosby.
An unrivaled blend of elite speed and pedigree. Lord Nelson, Pulpit's last great son. Look for his first crop selling at the upcoming two-year-olds and training sales. Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Number one, Essential Quality, undefeated the two-year-old champ looking at the Bluegrass at Keeneland on April 3rd for his next start. Number two, Life is Good, undefeated son of Into Mischief heading for the Grade 1 Santa Anita Derby next on April 3rd. Numbers 3 and 4, Caddo River and Concert Tour, they square off today in the Grade 2 Rebel at Oaklawn. Number 5, Mandaloon, another son of Into Mischief. Look for him March 20th in the Louisiana Derby. That's your Calling All Three-Year-Old segment presented by Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
My thanks to Bobby Newman for calling all three-year-olds, and my thanks to Spendthrift for sponsoring that segment. One three-year-old that you're going to want to keep an eye on, not just today in the Rebel, but moving forward, is Get Her Number, making his three-year-old debut after winning the Grade 1 American Pharoah in his only try on dirt. That was in September at Santa Anita last year. Trained by Pete Miller, who joins me now. Pete has trained more than 1,200 winners in his career. He has been to the Kentucky Derby twice. He's hoping that Get Her Number will be number three and provide a lucky appearance for him on the first Saturday in May. Pete, good morning. Appreciate the visit.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great, my friend. How about yourself?
Everything's good. Everything's good. Thank you.
All right. How is Get Her Number doing coming into the Rebel?
He's doing very well, you know. He's doing very well. It's you know, not ideal situation, but, you know, we got to get his campaign going, and this was kind of the only halfway logical spot to do it.
What was the plan after he won the American Pharoah, looking ahead to his three-year-old campaign? What would have been the ideal plan? You said this isn't really perfect, but you got to get him started.
Well, you know, after the American Pharoah, we were going to the Breeders' Cup, and then he came out of the work sore with some bone bruising, and so we had to back off him for about 30, 45 days, and he never was turned out, but we just kind of, you know, walked him and tack walked him and jogged him and all that stuff. So, you know, so that was the first plan that went awry. And then, you know, since then, it's just to get the horse back in shape and doing well, which he is. And, you know, the San Felipe last week came up a little quick for him. He wasn't quite ready. I felt like I needed another work. And there were no allowance races or anything. So, you know, this race fit timing-wise. But, you know, I don't think he's 100% fit. I think he's, you know, probably around 90%-ish. But I think you know, after this race, he should be ready to rock and roll.
That's the one thing that people tend to forget when they look at these early prep races, and we'll call it early. We're only about, 49 days away from the Kentucky Derby, but they forget that this is not the ultimate goal. It's a stepping stone, and in your case, it's the first step toward what you're hoping will be bigger prizes up the road. You decide to ship to Arkansas, and you look at the entries, and now you see Concert Tour, you see Caddo River, you see Keep Me in Mind. Pretty salty race.
Oh, very tough. Very tough race, and you know I'm just hoping he runs well and that we can build upon it. And you know, even the Kentucky Derby's never been my end all goal in horse racing. I just think it's too many good horses get ruined trying for it, and I like to call it the world's most overrated race. It just, the best horse rarely wins. It's usually run on an off track, and it's 20 horses, and it's just a mess. But if he takes us there, we'll certainly go. But if not, certainly not the end of the world.
What have you learned from the other two times that you've gone down this road and made it to the Kentucky Derby? You had a horse like Comet to the Top, who took you there in 2011, Gray Magician in 2019. What are some of the things that Pete Miller has learned in going through this process in the past?
Well, I've learned I can run last twice. So that's rarefied air there. Not a lot of guys can say they've run last in the Kentucky Derby twice. But all kidding aside, I
know why you think it's an overrated race now, Pete. It's overrated until you win it.
No, I thought that before I ever ran in it, honestly. But the hype carries it to, you guys need something to talk about, and the racing forum needs something to write about, and, the breeders need something to hype. And so, what I've learned, I think, was, that you got to have a horse that can handle, a 20 horse field and 100,000, drunk people screaming, and handle it off track, because it was off the times that I've been there, and you got to have the right horse at the right time. It's more about, again, the best horse rarely wins that race, so it's more usually about circumstance, getting the trip and having the right animal for the day.
What's different about Get Her Number now as opposed to the last time we saw him on the racetrack in September?
Well, he's matured. He's settled down some. He had a tendency to be a little nervous in the past, and he's still got a little bit of that in him. But we think he's settled down some, and he's filled out and grown, and we're looking forward to having a big 3-year-old year with him.
Jockey Javier Castellano, the Hall of Famer, takes over for Flavien Pratt. He doesn't make the trip. He'll stay in California and ride Sombaye in the San Sibian Stakes for you later today. Tell me about making that decision, going with Javier.
Well, Flavien was given the opportunity if he wanted to come. But, he thought, with all the protocols and the travel and missing days and everything else, that it was, more prudent, better situation for him here. And I've got him on a bunch of horses as well this weekend. So, Javier's, one of the best setters in the world, and won the Breeders' Cup for us on Belvoir Bay. And won grade one on Spice Perfection. So we've had really good luck with Javi, and I think he'll fit this horse well.
and trainer Pete Miller here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Pete, all the best with Get Her Number and the Rebel and then all the horses that you're going to be saddling this weekend and beyond. Thanks for taking the time. You're always very generous with your time. Really appreciate it, and go get it done.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you very much.
All right, Pete Miller on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And that interview, like all of our interviews, brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. I'm back to get you set for hour number three on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
There's a corner of Kentucky in Bourbon County, which some refer to as the Promised Land. There's something in the soil and water that make it something special. So special that some of the world's greatest horsemen have staked their claim in the soil just outside of Paris. Iconic names such as Claiborne, Coolmore, Stone, and Darley grace the fence lines which have housed champions for generations. The name Alapa shines as a tribute to the Gilded Age, sharing the stature and grandeur of its neighbors. Born from the wealth, passion, and imagination of Edward Sims, no expense was spared to fulfill his vision. Sims was in the same league as John Madden and Arthur B. Hancock Sr. as a commercial breeder. The torch has been passed. Welcome to Hill and Dale at Alapa.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
The COVID-19 vaccines are starting to become available across the country. And as they become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help get me back to doing the things I love? Like going out to my favorite restaurants, meeting with friends in person, or going on vacation and traveling again? And can I do it all without putting my family and those I love at risk? And is it safe? You've got questions. That's normal. Which is why it's so important to get informed. The medical community has made it clear. The vaccines authorized for COVID-19 have met the highest safety standards and can help protect us. Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for all the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. That's GetVaccineAnswers.org. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Hey, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires, comes your way every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Bobby Newman joins me to bring you all of the fall and winter action from places like Aqueduct, Gulfstream, Santa Anita, Del Mar, and Churchill, as well as interviews with the biggest players in thoroughbred racing. That's Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires. Tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live at horseracingradio.net.
Hello, I'm Junior Alvarado, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, back with you on the Equine Forum, getting set for hour number three. I'll tell you more about that in just a minute, but the first 2 hours, they have flown by. That has been fantastic. Crystal Fernung kicked it off in the first half of the show, talking about her charitable donation that they will be making, her and her husband Brent, coming up at the OBS sale. Talked about the OBS sale and the consignment of Eddie Woods in the first half of the show. Second hour of the program kicked off with John Green from DJ Stable, looking back on Helium's big win in the Tampa Bay Derby and looking ahead to what could be a start in the Kentucky Derby on the first Saturday in May. Kurt Becker with his stroll through racing history and a look at Lob Lolly Stable and Azari in the second half of the show. And then Pete Miller as well in the last segment, and he was fantastic too. Loved his quote when I asked him what he's learned about getting to the Kentucky Derby two other times. And he said, I learned I can run last in the Derby twice. Not many trainers can say that. Classic. Quote of the year here on the Equine Forum so far from Pete Miller. All right, coming up in the third hour of the program, it all kicks off 11 a.m. Eastern. That's just moments away. Kicks off with this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy, a unique one-on-one conversation with jockey Drayden Van Dyke. You won't want to miss it. Plus, I'll visit with trainer Ken McPeak to talk about the four-year-old debut of his champion filly Swiss Skydiver, and I'll be joined by HRRN analyst Bobby Newman to preview Oaklawn's huge afternoon of racing. If your local station is indeed leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour of the show nationwide on Sirius 219, XM 201, in the Louisville, Kentucky market on ESPN 680, or on your computer, phone, or tablet with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. Hour number three of the Equine Forum is next, right after I pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Concert tour set down. These two are dominating. It's four back to the Chosen Brawn and Uncle Boogie. And now Concert Tour is right up alongside Freedom Fighter. Freedom Fighter still not surrendering. They're nose and nose for the wire. And Concert Tour prevails. He had to work to do it.
I think Concert Tour, he's a horse I'm very high on. I think he's got a lot of upside to him. And he has natural speed, too. Should be a good test for him.
It is Paddle River. He has built up a 6 or 7 length advantage. Cowan is racing in second, but Caddo River has leveled out, and he is running strongly to the wire. It is Caddo River now double digits in front. Caddo River and the Smarty Jones straight and strong.
Caddo River, I think, you know, he's a nice colt that's going to have a big future.
Welcome to the Equine Forum. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour three of this loaded edition of the Equine Forum rolls on. Bob Baffert and Brad Cox, two of the trainers who are squarely in the spotlight along the road to the Kentucky Derby, both with sound bites in that open that you just heard, talking about their contenders coming up in this afternoon's Rebel Stakes. And I told you at the top of the show, when I opened the show at 8 a.m. Eastern, I told you about Bob Baffert and his interview last week. If you haven't heard it, go back to our website after I finish up this morning and take a listen. Bob talked about all of his top Derby hopefuls with me on this show last week. And I asked Bob the question about which horses are displaying the mental and the physical maturity that he likes to see from them at this time of the year. And he immediately mentioned three names: Life is Good, Medina Spirit, and Concert Tour. Well, we know Life is Good came out last weekend and justified the hype. He dominated the San Felipe last weekend, winning by 8 lengths over his stablemate, Medina Spirit. Not a bad effort for Medina Spirit at all. He just ran into a buzzsaw in Life is Good. Concert Tour, the third horse that Bob mentioned, is 2-1, second choice behind the Brad Cox-trained Caddo River in today's Rebel. So Bob was spot on last weekend with his two. And Concert Tour was the third name that came out of his mouth immediately after Life is Good and Medina Spirit. Take a look at Concert Tour today. Do not overlook him. I know he's stretching out, but he obviously has loads of talent. And look, it's a Captain Obvious type of statement because I know Concert Tour is second choice at 2-1. So when I say take a look at Concert Tour, I'm not going out on a limb. But just based on what we saw last weekend after Bob's interview, you have to think Concert Tour is going to be sitting on go today. Post time for the Rebel, race 11 of 12, is set for 6:16 Eastern, 5:16 Central. Brad Cox, Caddo River, a horse that dominated the Smarty Jones last time. It's going to provide a great showdown. You heard Pete Miller in the last half of the show talking about Get Her Number, who he said, probably not 100% today, but this isn't the ultimate goal. So you have to maybe think Get Her Number. If Get Her Number runs a huge race, you think, how good is this horse? Because Pete already told you that he's probably only 90% crank for this race. But after this race, he'll be in much better shape for his prep, his final prep before the Kentucky Derby. Yeah, that's a loaded field today. That is a great race, that Rebel Stakes. Also coming up in this final hour of the program, you're going to hear from trainer Ken McPeak. He'll join me right around, 10:40 Eastern time to talk about his champion, Swiss Skydiver, who makes her four-year-old debut in the Grade 1 Beholder at Santa Anita. And he's going to talk about En Voûtant, who gets her four-year-old season started in today's Grade 2 Azari at Oaklawn. Bobby Newman going to be with me prior to that segment at 10:20. He'll preview and share his thoughts on all the big races coming up at Oaklawn. He is making his way there now. We'll get a chance to catch up with him in just a little bit. But first, it is time to kick off the third hour of the program, as we customarily do, at least the past 6 or 8 weeks or so, with this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy, presented by ThisIsHorseRacing.com. This week, the former champion steeplechase jockey brings you his unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with the red-hot Drayden Van Dyke.
But with an eighth to go, it's a one-horse race. It is a complete runaway for Improbable and Drayden Van Dyke.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
Hi, I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Drayden Van Dyke. The Eclipse Award-winning apprentice in 2014 has engineered 722 wins for $45 million in earnings in 8 seasons. The 26-year-old Kentucky native has won Grade 1 stakes aboard City of Light, Improbable, Stormy Liberal, and Miss Temple City, and many others. Drayden, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You've been a California mainstay since the beginning, but recently announced an intended move to Keeneland in April with a new agent, Hall of Famer Gary Stevens. Take us through that decision. Why now?
Yeah, you know, well, there's been a lot of problems out here for the past few years, actually, with races filling and just a lack of horses and lack of opportunities. And unfortunately, my old agent, Brad Pigram, he parted ways with me and picked up Flavian Pratt, and I understand that was a business decision, and I wish nothing but the best for him. So I picked up Gary Stevens, and we just butted heads and thought it'd be a good time to head over to Keeneland and the East Coast Circuit. Way more horses, way more opportunities, and I'm from there, and I've always kind of wanted to go back there, but I've always been super successful out here, but it's time to make a little change, and sometimes change is good, so I'm really, really excited.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Are you excited, nervous, apprehensive? And it's a big move to go from California to Kentucky. It is home, so it's got to be more comforting, but describe your mindset.
No, I'm super excited. Look, I made this move before. I went there, and the year I won the Maker's Mark Mile on Miss Temple City, I stayed there that entire time, so I made this move before, but this is a little bit more serious move, in my opinion, because we're looking to stay there after the fact and go on into Churchill. So, I've rode with all these guys out there, and I've been around them since I was a little kid, and so it's nothing new to me, and I'm just looking forward to get out there and do some good.
For sure. Will there be much of an adjustment? I know you've ridden both places, but do you expect a big adjustment from California to Keeneland, or, you know, West Coast to East Coast?
I mean, the adjustments that I'm actually looking forward to the most is to be able to ride normal with the whip in an upward fashion. I know they're going to adapt a rule over there in Kentucky, but if I'm not mistaken, it's going to still be able to use it in the upward position, and I think that's a big thing I'm looking forward to the most, and the other adjustment is maybe just a little bit more clothing.
For sure. You're a patient rider, got good hands. That certainly will come into play when you come this side over to the East Coast.
Yeah, I mean, out here it's kind of brake really, really good. It's speed out here, California speed, and it's really quick. So that's different from Kentucky. They're more of a slower kind of pace and finish up strong. So, yeah, I mean, I adapt to whatever situation I can get in. So it's not going to be the difference for me.
For sure. So in 2014, Gary Stevens in the San Diego Union-Tribune said, about you. He's going to be a great rider if he keeps his head screwed on right. Great kid, great hands. He's strong. Reminds me a lot of Shoemaker. Same body type and good head on his shoulders. Doesn't let much bother him, positive or negative. How do you respond to that? I mean, then and now. I mean, is that something you feel like you've you deserved then, or was there pressure, or what was that like reading something like that?
I think it's very humbling, and it's coming from a guy from who's a Hall of Famer, and what Gary's done as a jockey and everything else is it's very, very humbling, and I can't put into words how much it means. And along with Mike, I mean, I'm so lucky to have these two guys in my corner. I can call on them anytime and ask them anything. But, yeah, I mean, look, I try to not get too high on myself when I'm doing extremely well, and it's good not to get too low on yourself, too, because sometimes you're not riding as bad as everyone thinks you're riding, or people love to kick you when you're down. And you just got to keep your mind in the middle, and look, you might not be on the best horses at the time, so you just got to stay positive, and everything will come around. Trust God and be positive, and always keep a smile on your face, and don't let other people see if you are kind of going through a tough time. Don't show it on the track, and just move on. I work out a lot, so that really helps me. If I'm struggling or I'm just not happy or whatever, I work out a lot, and that tends to help me the most.
Yeah, those guys, Gary Stevens and Mike Smith, they're great allies to rely on. I'm sure you use them for a lot of advice. Talk to them about everything, you know, under the sun when it comes to being a jockey.
Yeah, I mean, having those guys in my corner, and I mean, I've got a lot of other people that I can call on. I'm very fortunate to have the people around me that love me, and I love them too. I'm very, very blessed and very thankful for them.
Yeah, those guys, I've known them a long time, and they will say occasionally, he's young, but he's old school. And that's I've heard them say that about you, which is about as good a compliment as you can probably get.
Yeah, I always say, I say, man, I'm in the wrong era. I wish I lived in the 70s and 80s and that type of era. I think I belong better back in those days. But unfortunately, I'm in 2021, where you say the wrong word, you're gonna get canceled off the internet. So, but that's the times we're living in, and you just gotta be careful what you say. But I've always treated people with how I wanted to be treated, respect. And I mean, I was raised the right way, and I hold the door open for you and say yes, sir, yes, ma'am. And so that's how I am. So.
Yeah, and you're talking about the ups and downs. I mean, obviously right now you've won 5 races this year, so it's a bit of a down, kind of a down, I don't know if it's a slump, but a little bit down for your usual success rate. Has that been difficult to deal with, or how do you deal with that? I mean, you're a young kid making your way. Is that something you've had to kind of learn to deal with, or what's that been like?
Yeah, you know, I've been in a few little slumps, but I mean, this is probably my biggest one I've been in. Besides getting injured, I was out for about 6 months when I broke my arm really bad, but I came back strong from that. And look, when I get in a position like this, it makes me more hungrier, and it makes me think back to when I first started and how hungry I was and how bad I wanted it, and it reignites that mentality. And because sometimes you can lose that mentality when you're doing so good and you really don't have to work as hard. Horses come to you. You don't really have to go chase them. So we're in chase mode now. We're going to go out there and look for the good ones and work for the good ones too. And I'm not afraid to get my hands dirty and go out there, and I'll be out there whenever you need me to be out there. So it's crunch time now.
Yeah, we've watched your success, and yeah, you grew up that way, kind of under Tom Proctor's tutelage, and to learn to work hard and go at it. So that's very much in your mind frame coming back to Keeneland. I mean, Gary called it a reboot your career. I guess is that how you look at it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a change. It's sometimes, I mean, I'm a little stagnant out here. I mean, I got used to doing the same thing every day, working for the same people, and look, we only race 3 days a week out here, which is nowhere near as much as I should be riding so much more. I should be way more busier than I am. I'm playing more golf than I am riding, so that's not good. But my golf game is getting good, but I need to get out there and have more horses to ride and ride way more days. I mean, you see the top 10 guys in the nation, mostly they're on the East Coast, and they're riding 6 days, 5 days a week. So, I mean, that makes a difference.
Definitely. I mean, that's what you guys are, an island out there in California. It's hard. Short fields, yeah. And you probably do need to ride more often, more races more often to keep that edge and, you know, do the job at your best of your ability. I mean, I guess that will be a big difference when you come this side.
Yes, sir.
What was it like? I mean, you rode Authentic early and then lost the ride on him. What was that like? I mean, that must have been hard. I mean, how did you deal with that? Did you reach out to Mike Smith, Gary Stevens, talk to guys like that? Or how do you kind of bounce back from those kind of things?
Yeah, it's tough. I was undefeated on him until the Santa Anita Derby, and I finished second. I finished second to a very nice horse, in which I think if he didn't get hurt in the way he did, he could have been anything. Horse of John Sherris. I'm drawing a blank on his name. But look, we finished second that day, and I don't know what their decision was in taking me off, but I got taken off, and you got to respect that. But I really wish I could have stayed on him. I thought this was finally my chance to keep a big horse mount. I mean, I've been taken off many other times. I thought I've kind of earned my chance to stay on, but I respect their decision, and I just got to work harder and be more sharper, I guess, and be more better. I mean, I'm young. Hopefully further down the road, I can be one of those guys where I'm called on for a big horse. So I just got to keep working hard and keep my mind right and don't burn any bridges. That's the thing you don't want to do. You can't get mad from a business decision of a person taking you off. So it sucks. Don't get me wrong. It sucks really bad, but you got to move on.
Yeah, exactly, and that's those words from Mike Smith. I remember him talking to me about it. And, you know, he got taken off Vindication, and he, you know, from Baffert, and said, "Look, just keep me on the bench. When you think I'm ready, you know, don't kick me off the team, and I'll keep flying my trade and working hard." I guess it's a very similar approach.
Yeah.
As hard as that is, I mean, that's not easy. I rode jump races. I always like to say I got fired. I got fired every weekend. I mean, you lose rides, and you know, it's just part of the job description, unfortunately. But it's definitely that way.
When you're on a good horse like that, and it makes you excited to wake up because you know you have a really good one, and it makes you excited to get up in the mornings. I mean, I'm excited, but it makes you even more excited, and you look forward to it, and but good horses come and go. There's going to be a lot more coming, so that's the way you got to look at it.
Exactly. When do you know how good a horse like Authentic is, or an Improbable? And the first time you sit on him, I mean, is it instant? You think, wow, this is a different type horse than the normal one.
Yeah, you can. With my experience, I've been very, very lucky to really sit on some nice horses. So I know a difference from a good one and just a mediocre one and one that just is not that talented. So. But I mean, Justify was freaky good. It was just do things in slow motion, but you're not going in slow motion, and he does it with such ease and how smart he was, and you could do anything with him. You could place him anywhere. He was fast. He had everything you'd want in a horse, and he was special. Authentic too. He was when you have that kind of speed and you can break that fast and do it with ease in the way they do it, you can carry that speed a long ways, and it's deadly. People are trying to keep up with you, and you're out there just galloping. So, I mean, you know, you get the feel of a good horse, and and you just try not to tell too many people about it.
Yeah, exactly. And do those guys, I mean, when you've ridden the Justify and Authentic, do the guys like Mike Smith or and Johnny that do replace you, do they talk to you about it? I mean, you're a young guy, and I know they respect you. I mean, what's that like? Do they kind of try to say, you know, keep your head up and keep working hard, or what's that like?
I mean, not really, but yeah. they don't say, oh, you'll get your chair. I mean, Mike kind of has more than Johnny, but Johnny's not okay. Near me as much as Mike
right,
is, but sure. I'm sure Johnny would. He's that type of guy. Johnny's all class, and I'm actually looking forward to being around him a lot more and learning a lot from him, because I really, really like that guy, and I think he's an amazing rider and person. I know his family, and so yeah, I'm really looking forward to sharing some time with Johnny in the race aspect of things. And but yeah, Mike, he understands, or he tries to make me understand. He tells stories of like vindication and all, like you said before, and how many horses he's been taken off of, and how long it took him to win his first graded stake or grade one. And he's like, look, little sucker, you already won like 15 grade ones. You know, I've been riding. So, and I look at it like that. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I'm pretty lucky, but I always want more. I don't want to win 15. I want to win 50. I want to win as many as I can. I want to ride the horses that you want to ride. I want to take them from you. That's how this business is. And so you can't. I love Mike, but I mean, it's also competition too. So I mean, you got to think about that.
No question. So your move to Keeneland, what's your what if you could reach out to the horsemen and tell them who you are, what you're about? I mean, you got a, you know, 30 seconds to say, this is who I am, I'm coming to Keeneland. What would you tell them?
I would say I'm a hardworking, humble 26-year-old Louisville native coming back to Kentucky and ready to win a lot of races for anybody who wants to ride me. And like I said, I'm hardworking, and let's get the job done, and I'm excited to come out there and have some fun and win some races.
Amen, brother. That's Drayden Van Dyke. All you horsemen out there, get in touch with Hall of Famer Gary Stevens. Drayden Van Dyke coming to Keeneland. Drayden, thanks for being on the show. We look forward to seeing you at Keeneland.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
As always, a wonderful, unique visit by Sean Clancy. My thanks to Drayden and to Sean for bringing that segment to you every single week. In the Room, 10 o'clock Eastern, kicks off hour number 3. And really good stuff from Drayden Van Dyke there this morning. I'll get to another break. Coming up next, it's Bobby Newman talking about all the big races coming up, at least many of the big races coming up at Oaklawn this afternoon. And then Ken McPeak coming your way at 10:40 Eastern Time. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Justify, a four-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the three-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Adina Springs bred and raced the best son of Hall of Famer Ghost Sapper.
champion, multiple Grade 1 winner, and fellow Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in 3 decades to reel off this historic Grade 1 double.
It is going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten McKnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
I'm Manny Franco, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Caddo River leads by 2 lengths. Now make it 2.5. Now make it 3. Now make it 3.5. Caddo River tries to get away at the top of the stretch. Martini, Blue, and Cowan are racing second and third. That's all for Hardly Suede. Next, it's Moonlight Strike and Big Thorn, and Caddo River is dominating at the top of the stretch. It is Caddo River. He has built up a 6 or 7 length advantage. Cowan is racing in second, but Caddo River has leveled out, and he is running strongly to the wire. It is Caddo River now double digits in front. Caddo River and the Smarty Jones straight and strong. Caddo River won by 10. Cowan was second. Maybe Big Thorn for third and Moonlight Strike for it.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on HRRN. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, ready to talk some Oaklawn racing. That was Vic Stauffer with the call of the Smarty Jones. Caddo River just dominating that race, winning by 10 lengths, and probably could have been more. It was just ultra impressive. That was back on January 22nd. The waters get deeper today for Caddo River, even though he is the morning line favorite in the Grade 2 Rebel Stakes. He'll have his work cut out for him, facing the likes of Concert Tour and Get Her Number and Keep Me in Mind, but it should be a fantastic race. And here to tell you all about it is our HRRN analyst, track announcer, Bobby Newman. Bobby, appreciate the visit, my friend.
Anytime, pal. In Hot Springs right now. Looks like they're going to get lucky with the weather for the big day, and could be in the low 70s around post time. Just a few chances of showers, but certainly much better weather conditions from what we saw earlier this part of the country.
We were talking about last week's race with Life is Good being a very deep Derby prep. It looked like the field was pretty solid. This Rebel Stakes, at least from the outside looking in, you look at this field and you say, okay, this is a quality group. We could potentially see the Derby winner come from this race on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, this is a phenomenal prep, and that's what you get when you have this time of year. It's a perfect timing. There are no other preps this weekend. You put up $1 million for the purse, which is what Oaklawn does, and it just sits perfectly. And with the exception of Keep Me in Mind, who ran in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile last November, none of these horses have ever run against competition as tough as what they're going to see today. And you really have some budding stars. You mentioned Caddo River and how impressive he was in the Smarty Jones, as well as his maiden win before that. Bob Baffert's Concert Tour has done nothing wrong in his 2 starts. Keep Me in Mind, coming off a win in the Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club as a 2-year-old. And Get Her Number, who will probably be completely overlooked in the wagering, is a Grade 1 winner, winning the American Pharoah last September.
Yeah, Pete Miller joined me earlier in the program, and he talked about the fact that Get Her Number is probably only about 90% cranked up for this return race, this 3-year-old debut this afternoon. But he has high hopes down the road. We'll see if Get Her Number is well enough to go ahead and win this race, or fit enough to win this race this afternoon. But, Bobby, when you look at the other contenders, which are the ones – outside of the big names that you mentioned, which are some of the other horses you might be keeping an eye on as possible upsetters in the Rebel Stakes?
I really don't think there are going to be upsetters in here. You have some big long shots like Big Lake and Superstock that are coming off nice efforts against significantly lesser competition. I don't think they've run races yet in their career that could come close to beating these big names in the Rebel, if any or all of the big names show up. Twilight Blue, another one, coming off an allowance win, really has done very little wrong in his career, but he's never put up a kind of speed rating that would contend with horses like this. I guess the real question mark in the field would be the quote-unquote other Bob Baffert trainee, Hosier, Hozier actually ran against Concert Tour in their subsequent debuts. Hozier was the favorite on the morning line. Concert Tour went off the favorite and beat Hozier by 14 lengths that day. But since then, Hozier's come back and got his maiden win at a mile and a 16th, which is very, very impressive. You don't see Bob Baffert horses breaking their maiden around two turns very often. I don't think that he's as talented as some of the other ones yet, but he's certainly headed the right direction, and he's a horse that comes from off the pace. So if they get crazy on the front end and the pace just melts down, Hozier certainly could be rolling late. I really don't think that anyone outside of the top two or three, though, is likely to win this race. There's so much talent there with Concert Tour, with Keep Me in Mind, with Caddo River, that, you know, you're going to all three of them are going to have to throw in clunkers, I think, for somebody else to jump up and beat them.
Yeah, agreed. So who is your pick to win the Rebel?
I really, 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 really like Concert Tour. He's only sprinted his two starts. He's bred to be much better longer. He's by Street Sense out of a Tappet mare. And if you go on to certain websites to see the workouts that Concert Tour has had since his last race, he looks like he can run all day. I think he's going to get a perfect trip stalking Caddo River, take the lead at the top of the stretch and kick on. And the only one I'd be even remotely worried about is Keep Me in Mind, because I think he's the best closer. And if for some reason Caddo River and Concert Tour hurt each other on the front end, he's the one who may benefit most. But Concert Tour for me.
Visiting with Bobby Newman here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. His voice is familiar to you, no doubt, HRRN Nation, as you can catch Bobby and Anthony Stabile every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday afternoons with our Race Day program presented by Twin Spires. And then again on Friday afternoons, 6 o'clock Eastern, with our Weekend Stakes Preview Show, where he and Anthony take a look at all the big races around the country. That show presented by Naira Betts. Bobby, earlier in the program, we'll see another graded stake, and it's early because it's a small field. 5 horses entered into the Grade 2 Azari, purse of 350, mile and a 16th on the main track. This is a well-balanced field of 5 coming up in the Azari.
It really is. A field of 5, and all 5 are very, very talented. Even the longest shot in the field, Motion to Motion for Steve Asmussen, is a filly who's made over $500,000 already in her career. Marks the return of En Voutant, who has not run since November 26th. Marks the return of last year's Kentucky Oaks winner, She Dares the Devil, who has not run since a disappointing effort in the Spinster last October. You've got Latruska for Fausto Gutierrez and Joel Rosario, who's fresh off resounding wins in both the Rampart at Gulfstream and the Houston Ladies Classic at San Houston. And an up-and-comer in Get Rid of What Ails You for Brad Cox, who comes from way out the back and scored here at Oaklawn, taking the pip and coming from 11 lengths back. And she looks like, although she hasn't faced this kind of competition yet, she's headed the right direction. It's really a fantastic race for just a field of 5.
You really, 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 really like Concert Tour in the Rebel. Who do you really, really like in the Azari? Is there anybody?
There's nobody I really like in the Azari. I think that En Voutant is as good as anyone else. The morning line favorite is She Dares the Devil. Obviously, if she runs the race that she did when she took the Kentucky Oaks, she'll beat this field. The problem I have with her is that every other race that she's run probably isn't good enough to beat this field. So I just don't know what we're going to get from her. En Voutant is a filly who's shown that she can run well on the front end, or she can run well stalking the pace. And that stalking style, I think, is going to help her, because she's just not as fast as Latruska early on. I think Brian Hernandez Jr. will be able to get a nice stalking trip with En Voutant, and she'll be able to kick on at probably around 5-2 or 3-1.
We have about 3 or 4 minutes left to talk about a couple of other stakes races on the program at Oaklawn, the Essex and the Hot Springs. Let's start with the Essex, then we'll move on to Whitmore, looking to just continue a red-hot streak in the Hot Springs.
So the Essex is for 4-year-olds and up, going a mile and a 16th, $500,000 the purse. It's an interesting race. It marks the return of Silver State for Steve Asmussen and Ricardo Santana, who, in my mind, may be a little bit better as a late-running sprinter than a two-turn router. Tax is coming off a disappointing effort in the Pegasus, where he did not get to race with Lasix. In fact, his last two races in the Pegasus without Lasix, meaning the last two times he ran the Pegasus, he ran very, very poorly. Don't know if it was the no Lasix. Don't know if it was Gulfstream Park. But his races with Lasix are much, much better, and he gets Lasix on Saturday in the Essex. So I think Tax has a big chance. And Harper's first ride, another one coming off a poor performance in that Pegasus, switches to trainer Robertino Diodoro. Lasix back on. I think Harper's first ride has races that are making very dangerous.
Do we see Whitmore standing in the winner's circle of the Hot Springs again this year?
Well, Whitmore certainly could, but if he stands in the winner's circle, it's going to cost me money. I seem to take shots against this horse every time he runs, and obviously I've lost a little more than I've won with him because he just keeps winning. The two SoCal Invaders, CZ Rocket and Flagstaff, they've both had chances against Whitmore and have not been successful, but I think they have races that are better than what Whitmore can run. Maybe today's the day for one of them. I'll put CZ Rocket on top. I'm going to use Flagstaff as well. I respect Whitmore, but I'm going to try to beat him.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, Pete Miller, I was kicking myself after we wrapped up his interview earlier because I never got the chance to ask him about CZ Rocket. We spent so much time talking about Get Her Number and what he's learned about getting back to the Kentucky Derby and all those types of things that we never even touched on CZ Rocket. But this is a horse, 7-year-old gelded son of City Zip, who, look, I mean, on his day, he's as good as anybody. He wasn't quite as good as Whitmore at Keeneland in the Breeders' Cup Sprint, but yeah, he has plenty of ability, and you could certainly see him. It wouldn't be a shocker to see him in the winner's circle.
Now, the only negative to CZ Rocket is he's raced four times at Oaklawn, and he hasn't hit the board in any of those four starts. But to be honest, that was before he was claimed by Peter Miller, and simply put, he's a better horse now than he was then. So I think he has his best chance to be successful at Oaklawn today in the Hot Springs. And you know, Whitmore's 8-5 on the morning line. He'll probably be lower than that. So if you're going to try to beat him, you'll probably get a square price.
Bobby Newman, ladies and gentlemen, he's on top of it. He's as good as it gets, and you can catch him again every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday afternoon on Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, along with Anthony Stabile, and then again on the Weekend Stakes Preview Show every Friday at 6 Eastern, presented by Naira Betts. Bobby, appreciate the visit. Enjoy the weekend, and good luck at the windows, brother.
Appreciate it, buddy. Have a great weekend.
All right, good stuff. And there you go. Bobby playing against Whitmore, and that's burned him more times than not, but we'll see if he gets the best of him later today. Whitmore making his return to the races in that Hot Springs would be a special win, as so many of them are, with Whitmore and his entire team. When I come back, we'll turn our attention to the Phillies, when I talked to Ken McPeak about Swiss Skydiver and En Voutant. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Oscar Performance, the pinnacle of success as a precocious juvenile and again at 3.
Oscar Performance, bravo! He wins the juvenile turf.
Oscar Performance has won the Secretary of State's.
Oscar Performance goes all the way in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
And the pinnacle of success at 4, equaling the world record for a mile in the Grade 3 Poker and dominating the competition in the Grade 1 Woodbine Mile.
But it's Oscar Performance shrugs them off. A gate-to-wire winner.
Oscar Performance, standing at Millridge.
Experience the thrill of Maryland's finest thoroughbred racing at the Maryland Jockey Club at Laurel Park. Kick back and catch the live stream from home and visit firstbet.com to make a bet or stop by one of 8 off-track betting locations throughout the state to watch and wager. Visit MarylandJockeyClub.com for OTB details. Live racing Friday through Sunday with holiday exceptions and simulcasting racing from around the world every day. Post time, 12:25 p.m.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by 5 black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in 6 Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Beautiful Gift with a late rally on the outside into second. Miraz or Beautiful Gift. Miraz clear by a length and a half. Beautiful Gift coming. Here's the line. Photo finish. Beautiful Gift and Miraz. Beautiful Gift got right to her on the money. It's very close.
Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro did it again. Beautiful Gift scored in the Grade 3 Santa Isabel and appears to be headed to the Grade 2 Santa Anita Oaks next out on April 3rd. And that big win makes Beautiful Gift your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro. Beautiful Gift became the 150th Worldwide Stakes winner sired by Medaglia d'Oro, who will have his best bred crop ever to hit the racetrack as two-year-olds this year. Learn more about Medaglia d'Oro and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is Florent Giroux, and you are listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Three quarters up in 111.24, and they're into the stretch, and it's Swiss Skydiver, the filly, and the Kentucky Derby winner Authentic. They are nose to nose as they arrive at the final furlong. Swiss Skydiver digs in at the rail. Authentic on the outside, these two putting on a show. The Derby winner and the filly, Swiss Skydiver inside, Authentic outside. Swiss Skydiver, I think she did it. Authentic was with her on the wire in the Preakness Stakes. The final time was 1:53-1.
You know, I think that effort by Swiss Skydiver is even more impressive now, looking at what Authentic came back to do, winning the Breeders' Cup Classic, being named Horse of the Year. That performance and what she did that day, and the ride, by the way, by Robbie Alvarado, simply spectacular, but Swiss Skydiver, all heart in winning that Preakness Stakes. She was given a little bit of time off before going, well, I say a little bit of time off, it was about a month before coming into the Breeders' Cup Distaff, where she finished a disappointing 7th on November 7th, hoping to be joined by her trainer, Ken McPeak, coming up in just a little bit. We are efforting Kenny. He's out in California with Swiss Skydiver, who goes in the Grade 1 Beholder Mile later today. This is a fantastic race, and Swiss Skydiver figures to take some play in there, and really looking forward to visiting with Kenny. We'll also talk about En Voutant, who goes in the Grade 2 Azari at Oaklawn. So stay tuned for that interview coming up shortly. We are efforting Kenny as we speak. This gives me an opportunity, though, to spend just a minute talking about what's coming up here on the network, because we are now only, 49 days, 49 days, 5 hours, 3 minutes, and 35 seconds away from the Run for the Roses. Our team will be with you all week long, beginning on Tuesday prior to the Kentucky Derby for the first of three Derby countdown shows. Then we will segue into our exclusive radio coverage of the Kentucky Oaks on Friday, the Derby undercard on Saturday, and in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network, our coverage once again of the Run for the Roses. This is the 11th consecutive year that we have been able to say that we are the official radio partner of the Kentucky Derby, and it has been such a delight to work with the folks at NBC, and really happy to bring you that coverage. Our entire schedule will be posted on our website coming up here in the next week, so make sure you stay tuned for that. But yeah, fantastic stuff. Looking forward to another Derby week here on HRN, and so many of you have made us your home and really do appreciate it. This week in racing history, I always like to go back and kind of take a peek at what things have happened either on this day in racing history or are going to happen in the week ahead before I talk to you again next Saturday morning. Well, tomorrow, some cool milestones here. Tomorrow marks the 45-year anniversary of Bill Shoemaker winning his 7,000th career race. It was aboard the Charlie Whittingham train, Royal Derby II, in the fifth race at Santa Anita Park, March 14th, 1976. 34 years ago, tomorrow, 1987, jockey Lafitte Pincai Jr. became the first rider in the history of Santa Anita Park to win 7 races in a single afternoon. In his only loss of the day, Pinkai finished third aboard Bob Back in the eighth race. Think about that. Fantastic. And by the way, Lafitte Pinkai Jr., one of the classiest guys that you're going to meet in thoroughbred racing. I can remember sitting down with him for an hour-long interview at Santa Anita a couple of years ago, and it was such a highlight of everything I've done in racing because he's so inspirational. When you hear him talk about his approach to riding, you can see why he had so much success. Just fantastic. How about this one for you? And a little flashback soundbite, too. On Wednesday, we will celebrate the 48-year anniversary of a very special three-year-old debut.
Carry it is fourth, and Actuality finds room on the rail. The field straightens away in the stretch. Impecunious has the lead by a head. Actuality second. Between horses, Secretariat, and on the outside, Champagne Charlie. Four of them across the track with an eighth of a mile to the finish. Secretariat getting the lead. Champagne Charlie on the outside, second. Toward the rail, it's Actuality. 70 yards from the finish, it's Secretariat in front.
Dave Johnson with the call. That was March 17th, 1973, the three-year-old debut of Big Red, who won the Bay Shore at Aqueduct. And we know what he would go on to do afterwards in 1973. 21 years ago on Wednesday, we celebrate the anniversary of the passing of trainer Sonny Hine, the trainer of 1998 Horse of the Year Skipaway. He passed away after a long illness at the age of 69, certainly far too soon. That was on March 17th, 2000. And one other one for you. This coming Thursday, March 18th, the 20-year anniversary of the beloved loser himself, Zippy Chippy, who beat, believe it or not, March 18th, 2001, beat a standardbred by the name of Patty's Lady at Freehold Raceway, but because the race was an exhibition, Zippy Chippy officially maintained his record of 89 starts without a single victory. Everybody loves Zippy Chippy, and he became famous for a reason that no horse wants to be famous, but unable to win a single race in that career. Still trying to get a hold of Ken McPeak. We have tried a few times not answering, but again, he is in California. With Swiss Skydiver, and you have to imagine he's extremely busy out there getting ready for what promises to be a, at least he hopes will be, a spectacular four-year-old debut for his classic-winning filly. So let's do this. Let's get to another commercial break. When we come back, we will see if we can get Kenny on the line. If not, then we'll take you through the end of the program. You'll have to listen to me for another few minutes. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Racing fans, you can watch every Santa Anita race free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via a variety of ADW platforms, including First Bet. That's first.com/bet. Join us online this Saturday as last year's Eclipse Champion three-year-old filly Swiss Skydiver heads the Grade 1 $300,000 Beholder Mile. A winner of 5 out of 10 starts at 9 different racetracks in 2020, Swiss Skydiver won last year's Santa Anita Oaks in June, and went on to win 3 Grade 1 races, including the Preakness Stakes versus Kentucky Derby winner and eventual Horse of the Year, Authentic. Our co-feature on Saturday is the Grade 3 San Simeon for older horses at 6 furlongs on turf. With first post time Saturday at 12:30, join Tom Quigley and a special guest online at 11:20 a.m. as they handicap the entire 9-race card at santaanita.com/live.
Gainsway Stallion Caracanti is off to a strong start at stud. A leading sire amongst this crop by percentage of stakes horses, top runners by Caracanti include graded stakes winners Kenzai Warrior.
But Kenzai Warrior is sticking his head down and getting up. Kenzai Warrior wins the Horace Hill.
Sole Volante.
On the outside, Sole Volante runs by the leader. It's Sole Volante in front and going away.
Two-year-old stakes winner Spanish Love Affair.
16th to go, Spanish Love Affair almost home. Spanish Love Affair lives up to the hype and wins it 1-2.
And dual surface dynamo, Princess Grace.
16th to go, Princess Grace still in front. Pasta Plate is trying hard, but she's second to Princess Grace, streaking under the wire, the three-length winner.
A rising star with greatest stakes winners on both dirt and turf, Caracanti, standing at Gainsway.
There's a corner of Kentucky in Bourbon County, which some refer to as the Promised Land. There's something in the soil and water that make it something special. So special that some of the world's greatest horsemen have staked their claim in the soil just outside of Paris. Iconic names such as Claiborne, Coolmore, Stone, and Darley grace the fence lines which have housed champions for generations. The name Alapa shines as a tribute to the Gilded Age, sharing the stature and grandeur of its neighbors. Born from the wealth, passion, and imagination of Edward Sims, no expense was spared to fulfill his vision. Sims was in the same league as John Madden and Arthur B. Hancock Sr. as a commercial breeder. The torch has been passed. Welcome to Hill and Dale at Alapa.
Hi, this is Penelope Miller, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, winding down this edition of the program. It has been a very busy show, and no better way to wrap it up than with trainer Ken McPeak, who has saddled more than 1,700 winners in his career, including classic winner Swiss Skydiver, who took the Preakness last year, beating eventual Horse of the Year Authentic in a gutsy effort, finished her three-year-old season with a seventh-place finish in the Breeders' Cup Distaff, but is back in action later today in the Grade 1 Beholder Mile. And just got a note from my producer that we lost Kenny. The call was dropped. We'll try to get him back on. There he is. There's Ken McPeak. Kenny was just singing your praises, my friend. Welcome to the show. Appreciate a few minutes.
Hey, no problem.
Yeah, listen, I was talking about that campaign that Swiss Skydiver had last year, and I know it was disappointing to wrap it up in the Breeders' Cup Distaff the way you would hope that it wouldn't go. You wanted to see her win that race, but, boy, you can't take away from her. She had a tremendous year in 2020.
Oh, no question. You know, it was a dream year. We had to adapt to a lot of COVID protocols, but she took us a lot of places, and hopefully 2021 is the same, similar.
When you get ready to look at her debut coming up this afternoon, the Beholder Mile, and you look at her workouts, she is training extremely well. What are you seeing from her now that really impresses you?
Well, she's actually bigger and stronger than last year, you know, so it's an interesting it's going to be an interesting year. You know, she's just a big, massive filly, and we're pretty optimistic. It's a tricky race, though. You know, it's a short run to the first turn. It's not an easy group by any means. There's some horses in there with some high-level talent. And the expectation is we just want to see her run well and, you know, perform well. Obviously, there's no guarantees.
Tell me about making the decision to go all the way out to California for this four-year-old debut.
Well, I've got the other good filly, En Voutant, who's gone to Oaklawn, and we felt like that was a good first start for her as well, and we wanted to keep the two fillies separated. The fact that Swiss has won out here contributed. She's a great traveler, and so is En Voutant, though. But En Voutant's at Oaklawn, and this filly's here, and we're going to work hard and try to keep those two apart as best we can. They're both really, really talented. En Voutant doesn't quite get the accolades because she's not, you know, a Preakness winner, obviously, but she's a really special filly in her own right.
How challenging is it for a trainer to have to try to keep two quality horses apart that are in the same division?
Well, I hope it happens with every year, you know. it's a little tricky. You've got to have clients that understand, and I think sometimes it's an advantage because you can keep from having to butt heads with yourself, although, you know, they run against each other before and they worked against each other. They were great workmates, but in a way it can be an advantage.
You know, you've been in this position before, Kenny. You have had so many unbelievable horses, and in particular, so many unbelievable fillies over the year. And you think about what you're going through now with Swiss Skydiver and En Voutant, bringing them back and hoping for bigger and better things here in 2021. What are some of the things that you'll keep in mind as you get these horses started, and maybe you have kept in mind over the past few months bringing them back to the races?
Well, we still want to make the end of the year, Breeders' Cup. So we're not in a huge hurry by any means. But, the key is trying to keep them both healthy and, the timing's right on a lot of things. And we'll have to figure our way to the Breeders' Cup in the fall. But right now, it's a good first start. Time of year is a really good year. I typically gear down my stable in December and January and February a little bit anyway. And so now here we are in March, and we're getting ready to roll.
I love the way that you stuck with Robbie Alvarado, too, with Swiss Skydiver. I mean, his ride in the Preakness Stakes was unbelievably good. And, a lot of people would have said, hey, look, we had great luck with Robbie, but we're going to move on to a bigger name, a name that's a little bit hotter right now. And you decided to stick with him. I love the loyalty.
Well, the game's an up-and-down game, and it always has been. Robbie's suffered through couple of injuries in the last few years. He broke his wrist, and then this past winter he broke his wrist in December, I believe it was, and then last year he had another problem. I can't remember what that was. When he came off a horse at Dale Roman's, I believe it was that good colt Dale's. I'm drawing a blank on the name, but anyway, these kind of things happen, and for a jockey to get momentum, they obviously need an outfit. I've worked together with him for decades, and I feel like I'm working with the same Robbie Alvarado I've always worked with. He's got no fear of work ethic. When he's riding, he's done a great job for me. I can't say I'm overly critical of some of the rides he's given. Lately, we've been running a lot of our average to bad horses, to be honest. So that happens also. It's not about. Sometimes trainers and jockeys, a lot of times it's about the kind of horse you got under you're working with.
We haven't talked since Swiss Skydiver was officially named the champion three-year-old filly last year. How cool is it to hear her name called in that category?
Yeah, it was great. I've knocked on the door in that. I've been second and third maybe 10 times for champion of a division, which is a little frustrating. Horses like Tejano Run was the first one I ever had that was in line for the championship, and they tended to run second and third in some of the Breeders' Cup races, which, once again, frustrating. But those things got to come together, and it's a tough game. I mean, even just to be in the list is an award in itself. But the fact that they made her champion, I think, was certainly well-deserving, and I think you could have made a case that maybe she was one of the horses of the year, but that's a higher power that votes for all that.
Yeah. Ken McPeak with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I know it's a busy morning for you, Kenny, so I'll ask you one more question. Let's go back to En Voutant for a minute. I asked you about Swiss Skydiver and what you've seen from her over the past few months. You said she's bigger, stronger now as a four-year-old. You talked about En Voutant and how good she really is and how talented she is. What are some of the things you like that you're seeing from her right now?
Well, she's a filly that you've got to spread her races a little bit more. Swiss Skydiver, you can bring back a little bit quicker. She handles the work a little bit. She can work fast and doesn't bother her a bit. En Voutant's a little more sensitive, and I think 6 weeks in between races, even eight's a good number for her sometimes because she runs a really bang-up race when you do that. And she's coming off a layoff, and I expect her. I mean, the race she ran in the Fall City last fall beats about anything you put out there. Is she in the Swiss Skydiver Monomoy Girl conversation? She's got some stuff to prove, but she's certainly got a chance to be.
Well, Kenny, good luck later this afternoon. Let's go win two.
Sounds good.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Ken McPeak here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, just fantastic. Kenny's gotten off to a slow start here in 2021, and, he would be the first to tell you that. He's 2-62 this year, but this would certainly go a long way toward making things right if he can win with both En Voutant and Swiss Skydiver, and certainly either one of those two getting to the winner's circle would pick up the spirits of Kenny and with his barn. But you can hear, he's undeterred. He knows his program works. He has trained more than 1,700 winners in his career. More than $88 million in purses for his runners. He knows his program works, and he is completely confident. And great to see Kenny McPeak And my thanks to him, by the way, for taking time to join me. That interview brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Be sure to follow the road to the Kentucky Derby, plus have the latest racing, breeding, sales, and industry news and analysis, plus entries, results, race replay videos, and much more at your fingertips with the Blood Horse Daily app for your phone, which is updated throughout the day or delivered daily in an email. Go to bloodhorse.com/daily to download the app or sign up. Both of those, by the way, are free. It's bloodhorse.com/daily. Well, this has been a very, very busy 3 hours. At least from my perspective, has flown by. I hope you've enjoyed it. Crystal Fernung kicked off the program right around a little bit after 8 o'clock Eastern time to tell you about that fantastic charity auction that she's part of. Eddie Woods talked about his consignment at the OBS sale in Hour 1. Hour 2 was kicked off with John Green of DJ Stable. Kurt Becker was here to take you on a stroll through racing history. Trainer Pete Miller in the second half of the program. And in Hour 3, in the room with Sean Clancy, that fantastic interview with Drayden Van Dyke, Bobby Newman, and Ken McPeak. If you missed any portion of the show, head over to horseracingradio.net to check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio, doing a fantastic job, to Chauncey for handling all of our social media, and to all of you who took time to weigh in on the poll question at HRN on Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. In the meantime, Big Ben is back. Go Steelers.